help from President Trump on board Air Force One overnight.
We're always there for NATO. We're helping them with Ukraine. Doesn't affect us, but we've helped them. It'd be interesting to see what country wouldn't help us.
We're always there for NATO, says the President. He clearly wants help, but what should the response from the United Kingdom be? Response from the United Kingdom Prime Minister later today, talking about how they will ensure that those worse off will not be affected by soaring price rises. And in London, arrest on a restaurateur, Bharat Pankhania.
Usually we get two or three, so to have 13, there has definitely been a large, what we would call, spreader event.
Apologies, that's concerning the outbreak of meningitis. News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
Tom Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. President Trump has questioned the future of NATO if US allies fail to help reopen a key shipping lane in the Middle East. Iran has effectively closed the Strait of Hormuz, a crucial route for global supplies of oil and gas. Mr. Trump says it's only appropriate the beneficiaries of the strait help to make sure that nothing bad happens there. Military analyst Sean Bell has told LBC the waterway is Tehran's main bargaining chip in the war with the US.
Iran has gameplayed this all the way since it last had one of these big operations back in 1984-88. It knew what was coming. It's hunkered down. It's using the Straits of Hormuz to cause havoc. And it's not going to be easy for Trump to get around this one.
The Prime Minister will promise to help households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the Iran war. Sakir Starmer is expected to say later that helping families is his first priority. Plans to help people who use oil to heat their homes will also be revealed, as they're not covered by the energy price cap. The UK Health Security Agency says it'll provide antibiotics for some students in the Canterbury area after an outbreak of meningitis. Two people have died, including a student at the University of Kent. A further 11 people are understood to be seriously ill in hospital. LBC understands the government is drawing up plans to tighten pension rules on people with loose connections to the UK. The move will raise the amount they have to pay into the system by hundreds of pounds. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
LBC can reveal that the government will today clamp down on people who have only lived in the UK for a short time being able to claim part of the state pension. From April, that amount will rise to £900 per year, and people will only be able to contribute if they've lived in the UK for at least a decade.
Employers are to be paid to hire young people in an effort to bring down the rising number who are not in work, training or education. Official figures show they accounted for 1 in 8 people aged 16 to 26. The government has promised £1 billion in support and say the new deal aims to create 200,000 jobs. And one battle after another won Best Picture at this year's Academy Awards, taking home 6 Oscars in total. Jessie Buckley was named Best Actress for her role in Hamnet. Michael B. Jordan took home the Best Actor prize for Sinners. In this city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,261. It closed down 44 on Friday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, early showers gradually easing, but cloud building from the west, bringing further rain to much of the UK by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Maria wasn't mastering the art of macaron in Paris by accident. She booked a baking class on Get Your Guide. Fate didn't have the Brooks sipping matcha with a real tea master in Tokyo. They booked that on Get Your Guide too. And luck didn't have John learning the difference between bow and stern on a Majorcan boat cruise. You guessed it, Get Your Guide. The best parts of travel don't just happen. You make them happen when you book your tours, tickets and activities on the Get Your Guide app.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 3 minutes after 7, Monday, March the 16th. Those chants of death, death to the IDF heard again on the streets of London. Counter-demonstrations using the River Thames by the police to keep them apart. But so many people turned out in support of the Iranian regime. A regime which, on their own admission, has admitted to killing thousands of people and imprisoning thousands more. Why the support for them? In other news, and to clarify, after the tragedy of 2 students in Kent losing their lives to meningitis and others being treated, Bharat Pankhania is a public health expert from the University of Exeter. He told LBC yesterday,
Usually we get two or three. So to have 13, there has definitely been a large, what we would call, spreader event.
To London and the controversy over a London-based Indian restaurant that does not sell halal meat and proudly declares it does not sell halal meat. It has been the focus of demonstrations by those who are pro-halal meat. And there was a protest on the weekend. And this is the moment when the protesters, outside the restaurant, making considerable commotion, led to the arrest of the restaurateur, Harman Singh Kapoor. And you can tell the reaction. So his crime, in quotes, is to decide that he does not want to sell halal meat, and the Met respond by arresting him with the demo outside. So far, the Met have refused to comment. We'll spend the next 2 hours and 55 minutes trying to put that right. In other news,
the Prime Minister will announce cost of living support worth tens of millions of pounds for the least well-off households' reliance on heating oil. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with a preview of the Prime Minister's speech.
Plus, in a related story from the Prime Minister to the President, as President Trump makes a request for NATO assistance to send ships to the Strait of Hormuz. By the way, we don't have that many, but should the UK agree?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Police made 12 arrests at the annual Al-Quds Day protest, which took place on Albert Embankment near Vauxhall yesterday. Of course, so you know, the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood banned a planned march, made it a static demonstration. And reporting, who was there, Liam Gotting, LBC's reporter, was there and reports now. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, well, hundreds gathered on both sides of the River Thames as part of the Al-Quds demonstration, as well as the counter-protest. On the Al-Quds side, there was a sea of Iranian flags, Palestinian flags, and many people were carrying pictures of the former Ayatollah Khamenei, as well as the new Ayatollah as well. Musician Bob Villain spoke at the protest yesterday. This is what he had to say to the crowd.
The Zionist influence here in the UK is palpable. We can feel it. We can see it. We can see it when we look at these pigs that are here today, itching to put their heavy hands on any... itching to put their hands on any and every one of us that might challenge the wretched system that they uphold. A system corrupted from the top down, not the bottom up.
Well, during the demonstration, we saw a placard saying, boom, boom, Tel Aviv, another placard in support of Palestine Action, and heard chants of Israel is a terror state, and a lot of from the river to the sea. I asked some of the protesters there their opinion on the former Ayatollah Khamenei.
Hey, what made you want
to
come down today?
We are here to celebrate the Quds Day, which is supporting Palestinian cause. And also, we are here condemn the war against Iran.
What do you think about Khamenei? Do you think he was a good leader?
He was a great person. He was a man of principles and dignity.
They're crazy. They're attacking. They don't have any permission to do this against the humanity.
Are you here today to mourn the Ayatollah, the late Ayatollah?
No, humanity. It's nothing to do with person. I'm not about the person.
We want to show the British government that we do not stand with what they're doing. We're not blind. We do not fall to their lies. They might try to lie to us and say that Britain is not complicit in what's going on in Iran. But, in fact, they are. And to me, this is the fight between falsehood and truthfulness.
Well, on the other side of the Thames, 100 more gathered to counter-protest, waving British flags or American flags, Israeli flags, as well as the Iranian flag with the crest of the Shah. I honestly felt, Nick, like a bit of a party on that side. There was music, many people were dancing in the streets, celebrating the death of the Ayatollah. I asked counter-protesters what they thought about the recent US and Israel attacks on Iran.
I think it's great they come to help the Iranian in Iran, bring a new regime which is help the people, not help the terrorists.
That was something that we were waiting for, to ask President Trump to send us help. I think like more than 80% of Iranian people inside Iran as we speak, they're very happy with this.
Actually asking for it, and then we're happy. We're asking for help and they help us, and then we carry on until we get rid of this regime. This time, this is as the people said, this is the final battle.
The Met Police said 12 arrests were made in total on suspicion of various offences, including showing support for a proscribed organisation, a fray, and for threatening or abusive behaviour. They're also investigating chants of death to the IDF, led by Bob Villain at the protest. He was not charged following the chant at Glastonbury last year. The force said that significantly less people attended than initially anticipated, and they believe the reason for that is the banning of the march, which they said proved to be the right decision. And ultimately, Nick, despite multiple arrests, clashes between police and protesters, particularly during the dispersal of the crowd, and now an investigation into chants, the Met Police said that yesterday their policing plan was a success.
Liam Gotting reporting. So here are just a couple of the chants, as I will teach some contributors to inform our conversation, then come to your reaction. You've already heard death, death to the IDF. Try this one on as well. One solution, revolution, revolution. Iran, you make us proud. Make this the final round. As I said, death, death to the IDF and from the river to the sea. Let's bring in John now. Lord Walney, former advisor on political violence and disruption to the UK government as recent as 2025, and joins me now. Lord Walney, the three chants that I just read out, just an overview of those. Are they causing offence? Are they actionable in your view? Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. They are vile. They are completely inappropriate, in particularly in a time of conflict when the Iranian regime is attacking our allies, as it is, as you have said, killed tens of thousands of its own citizens, and it's putting British citizens and British bases and potentially UK territory at risk. I think there is that particular question of should they be actionable, and I think many of these chants are probably chosen so that they inhabit a grey area which will make it difficult for the police and the Crown Prosecution Service to be able to prosecute. There is the widest question of how we've got here as a country, but I think we ought to be focusing on the particular issue that really we should not have been being effectively forced through no alternative in the law at the moment to have facilitated a large-scale platform for those views to be broadcast to many thousands of people. And yes, I think the police did make the right call in banning the recommending to the Home Secretary that the march was banned, stopping it being a procession. But of course, this has highlighted that there is no comparable power to be able to recommend that a static protest doesn't go ahead. And while it may have been a relative success in public order policing terms, which is, I think, how the Met is looking at it, perhaps understandably, it has provided that platform and focus for vile anti-Semitic pro-Iranian regime views, which are questionable, well, objectionable, vile at any time, but in this time of conflict we shouldn't be allowing.
Can you figure out, Lord Walney, how it is that these people are there on the streets offering this level of support for, as you say, a regime that's possibly killed tens of thousands, by its own admission, admits killing thousands? Is it because of what seems to be utter hatred of Israel's policies?
I think there's complete hatred of the West, of Britain, of the system in which many people are living. There is a strand of opinion which is implacably opposed to that, and a virulent hatred of Israel at anything that it does is part of this, and always people of that view will find particular instances to be outraged that have happened recently. But what is actually driving it is a deep-rooted anti-Semitism. And let's remember that this Al-Quds Day march. I mean,
respectfully, Lord Rawney, you can sure have real issues with Benjamin Netanyahu's policy and not be anti-Semitic, of course. I mean, I don't agree with anything Benjamin Netanyahu.
Absolutely, you can.
Go ahead.
But that's not what these people are.
No, I see what you say. Yeah.
This march was invented by the Iranian regime after the 1979 revolution. It is about calling for the total destruction of Israel. Yep. And yes, there are many people who are not virulently anti-Semitic, who are deeply opposed to the conduct, the strategy of Prime Minister Netanyahu and the state of Israel, how it has conducted itself in Gaza. But that's not what is driving these people.
Final word, if you would, briefly, if you can, the idea of prescriptional banning of the IRGC, just to clarify, where are you on that, Lord Walney?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It needs to happen. Successive governments have dragged their feet for too long. It would be significantly easier if the IRGC was banned, to be able to hone in on some of the Iranian soft power, which has spread itself across our country. I've had a report last week about the Iranian regime's inappropriate influence within the charity network. But all of this ultimately the IRGC underpins this soft power network. And if we could ban them, it would be much easier to shut down the rest.
Grateful for your time. Thanks very much, John. Lord Walney, former advisor on political violence and disruption to the UK. That's the political side. The policing side after the news headlines with Sir Peter Fahey, who, of course, was Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police. You'll hear from Sir Peter after the news. And also later in the hour,
the Prime Minister will announce cost of living support worth tens of millions of pounds for the least well-off households' reliance on heating oil. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with a preview of the Prime Minister's speech.
7:15 now, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has questioned the future of NATO if US allies fail to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Sir Keir Starmer will promise to help some households with the cost of living as the war in the Middle East drives up energy prices. And two people, including a student, have died following an outbreak of meningitis at the University of Kent. LBC weather: early showers will gradually ease, but cloud building from the west, bringing a band of rain to much of the UK by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25, clockwise, the exit slip road at Junction 6 for Godstone is closed for recovery work after an accident, so there are long delays with the queues from Junction 5 for the M26. There are queues in Hendon on the A41 Watford Way going into town. It's partly blocked at the Boroughs because of an accident. It's slowing northward. Joel Street southbound is partly blocked between Tolcarn Road and Colchester Road because a bus has broken down. On the A2 going into town, it's taking about half an hour to go from the Danson interchange to the Kidbrook interchange. On the Tube, there are minor delays on the entire Victoria line. That's because of some cancellations. And also on the Tube, Mansion House station on the District and Circle line is closed. It's because of a shortage of staff, so trains aren't stopping.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
The future is unpredictable at times, but the Open University are the experts in online learning, allowing you to fit study around your life. What's more, you'll have support from dedicated tutors every step of the way. Now, suddenly your possibilities are open. Search the Open University to find out more. The Open University. The future is open.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pukka Herbal Tea. Ah, Pukka. Nothing beats nature.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. And when we say everyone, we mean your dad, Dan, Danielle, Dean, Dave, Dale, Dell's delivery driver Denise, Denise's dentist Dinesh, and Devon's strongest man, Donathan. Donathan? Donathan, that can't be right. Donathan? well, whatever your name is. If you're a real person, investing is for you too. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 606093.
19 after 7, headlines in a moment. We've had the political aspect of those demos in London. What about policing? My thanks to Sir Peter Fahey, who's former Chief Constable of Greater Manchester and police leader of the Prevent programme, through until 2015. Sir Peter, thank you for hanging. I hope I've not interrupted your morning routine too much. Quick word, with a number of people on the streets, 12 arrests, I chalk that up as quite a success for the Met. Where would you stand on that? Morning, Sir Peter.
Yeah, I think the operation was successful. I think a lot of the police officers there will be probably scratching their head. It'll appear there may be more police officers on duty than actually protesters. But I think the operation went well. Very little disruption to the life of London. Good use of the river as a barrier between these two groups. And they've also bought themselves time. A number of arrests were made, but they'll have gathered a huge amount of material. And they can then review that with the Crown Prosecution Service, but they'll face the same difficulty as you've already discussed. You know, they've had already experiences of the Crown Prosecution Service saying certain chants are not illegal or would not succeed in the courts, but even then they've got experiences of juries, you know, rejecting charges or even then going to the High Court and then kicking it out, as with the ban on Palestine Action. So, yes, you know, it was a policing operation was successful, but clearly, you know, a lot of these vile chants were made and the Met and other police forces have this wider responsibility towards community cohesion and trying to help people to live together. And, of course, these sorts of counter-protest yes. and even the publicity around some of this chanting, you know, obviously creates more division and overall makes things more difficult for the police in this whole situation, which, as we know, has already cost the job of one chief constable over the football match in Birmingham.
Yes, you refer to Craig Guildford in the West Midlands. So everything really that we stand for in this country, both sides had their say. They all of them mostly went home peacefully. No police officers hurt. But, Sir Peter, this situation is only going to get bouncier. What does the Home Secretary need to do, particularly with regard to the IRGC, Sir Peter?
Well, they can ban, you know, that. I'm not sure that that will actually help with the protests. I heard your previous speaker say that, you know, they should consider banning static protests. I think policing will see that as very difficult because there's no legal definition of what is a protest. A group of people can gather anywhere without notice. So really, if all these people are scattered around London in different groups, it would be even greater policing challenge. There is, you know, a fundamental right to protest, which is important to all of us. And there'll always be that grey area in the middle about what's acceptable and not acceptable. So I think, you know, it has been a huge policing challenge that will have cost a huge amount of money. Yesterday, those officers could have been doing lots of other things, you know, across the city. But this is really, a horrendously complex situation for policing because of this intersection between the law on protest, hate crime law, counter-terrorism law, you know, even threats to kill law. All this is really complex. It is taking up a lot of time of the police. And no doubt, even after this event, there'll be lots of complaints and calls for the police to do this and that, so it will have a long tail.
So, Peter, I'm
not sure the police will not think that more legislation is going to solve that, Nick.
Peter, thanks for your time. Sorry if I've interrupted your routine this morning. Thanks for hanging on. Sir Peter Fahey, former Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police. 22 after 7. Quickly, the headlines, because I want to come to your calls on this. Well, the main story is about the level of support, or not the level of support, that should be provided to the US from the United Kingdom. We played you that clip, as they call it, from President Trump, and we are looking at this in more detail in the show. Starmer refusing to send warships to Strait, as in Strait of Hormuz, is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Britain could send minesweeping drones to help clear vital oil route, as the front page of The Guardian. The Times saying PM resists Trump's call for warships in the Strait. That's also on the front page of the I newspaper as well. They have headlines, help on way. Front page of the Daily Mail, very distressing story, which again we will look at later in the show. Two dead in university meningitis outbreak. And I'll finish with The Sun. I won't do all of them. I'll finish with The Sun newspaper, which is the mother of all insults. It was, of course, at Mother's Day yesterday. I do hope you all remembered, if you're fortunate enough to still have your mum with you. And unfortunately, Brooklyn Beckham snubbed his mother, Victoria, and praised his mother-in-law. which I just wish that fight could some way come to an end. To the LBC app, everything you need to know about last night's Oscars. You've already heard it, of course, on the LBC Bulletin. One Battle After Another is the name of the movie. One person who lost his battle is, of course, Timothy Chalamet, who faced an Academy snub. Apparently, he was the target of some gags or jokes by Conan O'Brien at the start of his routine. And, of course, he was hotly tipped to win the Oscar. He lost out. Possibly after those rather insulting comments, derogatory remarks about opera and ballet and others. Perhaps he's rather ruining that. OK, let's come to events here in the UK. 7:24, Peter's in Stirling. Why do young, well, not all young, mostly young people turn out in support of a regime that murders its own people, do you suppose, Peter? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think what we're actually seeing here is what happens in always in terms of war and perceived crisis. And I think even you may have noticed this over the years. Have you noticed how all protests seem to be quite binary? There's a protest and a counter-protest.
Yes.
When there actually are dozens of different views on each side. I mean, you heard there from those people there. There was one person praising the Ayatollah, and then the same, another person next to him goes, no, I don't like him at all.
No, I know.
It's, unfortunately, because of this model we always seem to have in society of protest and counter-protest, you get moderates and extremists, unfortunately, marching shoulder to shoulder on both sides. So I think we have to be very careful when we say that everyone there is an extremist or everyone there is a moderate. I think there was a mix of, as a mix, as in all things, in all movements, on both sides. And there were multiple different movements there. I don't agree with, I think things like, for example, that solution, one solution, revolution one, that feels far too close a reference to the final solution, so I think that's disgusting. But at the same time, I mean, as hard as it is, and I'd never use these chants myself, specifically anti-IDF chants, I don't know, it's a hard one. I don't think that they should be banned necessarily. I think they're a bit right on the edge, but I don't see the IDF as a protected group. I think any anti-Jewish chants, I think that solution one was a bit closer to being outright anti-Semitic, but it's a hard one because, you know, two people may use the same chant and have different motives.
Peter, thank you. John in Enfield. John, why do people support the Iranian regime?
Well, the thing that's sticking out like a red rag now is we're basically the only country in the world that hasn't banned the IRGC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I look at this as a really treacherous act by Starmer. He's, you know, he's going to be caught kicking and dragging to actually ban this group. By all reports, a lot of these people in the IRGC are starting to leave Iran, and they're either heading for the UK or Canada. Canada has banned the IRGC, but there's a loophole where it doesn't ban the Ayatollahs and the Mullahs, yeah? But the Maida Vale is going to act as a terrorist hub.
Well, we don't know
that.
I mean, let's choose our language carefully. We don't know that, but at the moment, as it's not banned, there is a possibility that they could come to the United Kingdom. You're absolutely right.
They are they are coming, Nick.
Yes,
and there's no bar at all. The United Nations has banned them. The European Union has banned them. France has. The whole world has. Yeah,
I know,
but it's open arms. The army should come in and arrest the traitor Starmer.
All right, OK. You've had too much of that. I suggest some decaf for you this morning. We're not going to have the army arresting Keir Starmer, fortunately. John, thank you for your input. Quick turn to the social media. Julie says, why are any marches allowed in London in these volatile times? Surely a blanket ban is the safest way forward. Well, that's called living in Iran, Julie, and that's not what we want. You have to allow these demonstrations unless there's obviously going to be some kind of a clear intent of violence or law-breaking. And actually, although 12 arrests, of course, that really, I think that was pretty much a success. John in Hartlepool asks, IDF air raids on the civilian areas in Lebanon killed hundreds, displaced 700,000 since the start of the war. No coverage. Someone chants death to the IDF. Guaranteed coverage. How does that work? So asks John in Hartlepool. You've not been listening to the news bulletins, reading the same newspapers or watching the same newscasts that I have, John. Suggest you perhaps broaden your mind a little bit. Let's come back to events that are happening here in the UK and obviously challenges for many folk here, not least those who are dependent, of course, on heating oil, where I think prices have gone up by more than 100%. This will be addressed later today by the Prime Minister, and here with a look, Ed, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke, is in the studio. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, he will lay out this morning plans to help with tens of millions of pounds. They will specifically be for poorer households, so they won't be for everyone, but they will, as you say, be to help with the cost of heating oil. And we know that they have had their prices spiked the most in the last couple of weeks because of the price cap, which keeps things down for people on most normal sort of other types of energy, oil and gas, has been spiking. The cost of crude oil has jumped above $100 a couple of times now, and this was just $71 a barrel before that conflict began. And you've been hearing on your show, Nick, haven't you, all week, how people have had their heating costs. Some even have seen them even double. Now, a week ago, the Chancellor was speaking to MPs. She said it was too early to say what the economic impact on the UK would be.
At this stage, I think it would be unwise to speculate on what the impact on inflation, growth or interest rates would be. Of course, we are looking at a number of scenarios and monitoring very carefully the situation. But the quicker we can de-escalate, the better it will be for all of those different economic variables.
Now, Nick, we know that the price cap for most households is in place until June, but that doesn't impact on heating oil. At the weekend, the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, told The Times she had now found the money to help. It's expected to be a package worth £50 million. Last week, the Prime Minister went to Northern Ireland, where many of those people do rely on heating oil to heat their homes.
About two-thirds of households are using oil as their heating, and therefore it is really important. Obviously, the prices are fluctuating on a daily basis. The most important first thing is to coordinate with international leaders to de-escalate the situation. At the budget, we did set aside money for energy bills to take money off those bills. That money is there, and so what we're looking at now is how quickly can we work with others, because this is the decision of others, to translate that into money off bills. The Treasury Minister is going to coordinate with the Executive to see what we can do.
He will also raise concerns about claims of suppliers cancelling orders and jacking up the prices. And you'll remember, Nick, the absolute chaos that we saw on Friday with the Petrol Retail Association pulling out of that meeting with the Chancellor, with those Treasury bosses. The Prime Minister will be hoping that that doesn't happen again. However, he does is expected to warn if the companies have broken the law, there will be legal action here.
OBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. Coming up after the news, there was a major initiative, if that's what it's called, for mass shoplifting. The idea that these people would steal from supermarkets and give it to the needy. The organisation Take Back Power. Here's Eve from the campaign group.
Essential items are locked behind spiralling prices, while 4 million children are in poverty in the UK. We're the sixth richest nation on earth, and this is completely unacceptable and disgusting.
And you'll hear from one of the organisers right after this. 7:31 breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Then Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has questioned the future of NATO if US allies fail to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The key shipping lane in the Gulf has effectively been shut by Iran, cutting off around a fifth of global oil supplies. Sir Keir Starmer is due to set out support for households struggling with the cost of heating oil, which has soared due to the Iran conflict. The oil isn't covered by the energy price cap, and some customers have seen their bills double. And antibiotics are being given out to some students in the Canterbury area following an outbreak of meningitis at the University of Kent. Two people have died and 11 others are seriously ill in hospital. LBC weather. Early showers will gradually ease for much of the UK, but cloud building from the west bringing further rain later, a high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Petrol Retailers Association have got some explaining to do here. It isn't good enough to just say, oh, well, you don't understand how the petrol market works. You don't understand how our pricing works. We're operating at razor-thin margins. What people see is a war in the Middle East and the prices rise immediately at the pumps. And that's on oil that hasn't yet been purchased and is using oil that has already been bought and stored. And it doesn't make sense other than to think that these retailers are ripping you off. And I think the government's right to point that out.
Tom Swarbrick. Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, back to more of your calls on that demo in London. What is it that makes people go out and support a regime that by its own admission has killed innocent people and imprisoned thousands more? By its own admission, is it just an absolute hatred? Hatred of anything and everything that Israel does can surely be the only explanation. More on that in a moment. Let's get into the world of business, joined by Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Now, we're going to be talking about Donald Trump's request for more help from NATO as regards battleships, and that takes us to the Strait of Hormuz. What's the latest there on the business front? Morning to you, Christian.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I've been keeping an eye on the price of Brent crude this morning. And it's climbing. It's climbing as we speak, in fact, now north of $105 a barrel.
Wow.
That's a pretty scary price for a number of reasons, even in the context that it might climb higher. We understand, of course, that Donald Trump and Keir Starmer had a conversation yesterday. We don't imagine these conversations are particularly warm at the moment. But the president has said that he would like to see an international coalition sending ships into the Straits of Hormuz to escort tankers. And Britain, along with others, including France, have said, well, hang on a minute, no, not quite sure about that. Even the Americans are not yet doing it because it is extremely risky. But the economic and domestic and international political pressure on the US in particular to do something to alleviate the crisis in the oil markets, which could become a wider crisis in the energy markets, is pretty significant. Donald Trump has invoked NATO, not formally, but he has previously said that whilst the US would always be there for its NATO allies, he was never sure whether they would be there for him. Now, most people took that to be in reference to the idea that the US would somehow be attacked. I'm not sure people would draw the link between that sentiment and what the US and Israel are currently doing in Iran, but the president clearly does. Keir Starmer, for his part, has said, look, we've got some anti-mine drone technology. We might look at that. It's certainly a huge issue. And we will hear more from the prime minister later today about domestic political response to the energy crisis and what kind of support we might expect.
Talking energy crisis, one newspaper, The Eye, looks ahead to Thursday, where, of course, we're going to hear from the MPC, the Monetary Policy Committee. Where's the wind blowing on that possible decision in a few days' time, Christian?
Well, things move quickly, Nick. It really wasn't that long ago that all the smart money said there'll be three further reductions in interest rates this year. Certainly something the government was hoping to see. That is not likely to be the case anymore. I suppose the sensible view is that when the bank meets on Thursday, they probably will hold their interest rates. It had been expected to be a further reduction down from 3.75. Expectation now that they will hold in a sort of wait-and-see mindset. Because, of course, analysts are pointing out that if there is some sort of resolution, be that diplomatic or otherwise, to the conflict, particularly regarding the oil sector, then it might be that they resume their downward trajectory of interest rates by the early summer. But if that doesn't happen, if we see a sustained conflict, wider regional conflict, heavy spike in the oil price upwards of $130, $140 a barrel, then we really are in trouble. And that's going to feed in pretty quickly, not just a question of oil and energy prices, but global trade, shipping, transport. Think of everything that might move through those waters, everything from fertilizer to helium, which is required in the manufacturing of microchips.
Yeah.
So the wider economy will feel that pretty quickly. The Bank of England probably going to wait and see this week. And then if things really don't start to improve, then there is still talk about the fact that they might need to start raising those rates again. So it's going to be pretty interesting days ahead and see what the Bank of England says as it tries to provide some sort of guidance on what they're thinking.
One person who needn't worry too much about their energy bills or, of course, the interest rates, his finance is only going in one direction. The extraordinary rise and rise and rise of one Harry Styles, and yet more money coming the way of London this time. What's this boost then, Christian?
I'm sure you've already got your VIP box tickets for the backstage meet and greet, Nick, for Harry Styles in his 12-night Wembley Stadium residency this summer, which economists say will lead to about a £700 million worth of spending on tickets and travel and accommodation, about £200 million of which will be directly to the benefit of London. It's not a national tour, so this is economic gains concentrated in the capital. But when you consider all the expenditure associated with this sort of performance, it'll be a welcome boost, not just to London, actually, but to the economy. I think when Taylor Swift was on tour in this country, her contribution was widely regarded as having kept the UK out of recession. I'm not sure Harry Styles is going to achieve quite such a result up against the forces in the economy that he is, but I'm sure it'll be a welcome boost nonetheless.
All right. Thanks for that, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, coming up on 7:40. Khaled, you will be the next caller on the Al Quds March, but we're talking about business, so let's talk about an organisation that's wanted to make a stand about big businesses. Campaign is launching a mass shoplifting spree across the United Kingdom on the weekend. It was reported they were to target supermarkets such as Tesco, Sainsbury's and Morrison's in cities such as Exeter, London, Manchester and Truro. Let's turn to the organisation is called Take Back Power. Luke Swithland is a spokesperson for it and joins me now. Thank you for coming on, Mr. Swithland. How many people were involved and how many different cities were you in? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Cheers for having us on. Could you repeat the question, sorry?
Sure, yeah. How many people, how many campaigners were out there? How many cities were targeted?
I don't know the exact number, but we had a handful of people go to numerous supermarkets to take food off the shelves and donate into local food banks because people in this country are struggling.
Right. Were there any arrests?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Right. What is the thinking behind stealing from the shops?
Well, it's to highlight the fact that we are living in a cost of living crisis. People in this country are really struggling, but there's corporations and a small group of people who are making record-breaking profits in this crisis, and that's not fair.
Mr. Smith, when Sainsbury's or Morrison's, when they have goods stolen, what do you think they do as a result?
Are you about to tell me that the prices go up? Because the prices are going up regardless.
No. Perhaps you'd just like to answer the question. You agree they put the prices up?
They do, yes, but not because...
So, excuse me. We both have a cough today, don't we? So if they put the prices up, obviously those who are hit the hardest by the prices going up are the most poor or the poorest. So you're actually hurting those you're seeking to help, Mr. Swithland.
No, because the prices are going up regardless if we're taking food from the shelves or not.
No, of course prices are going up because raw materials are going up. I understand that. But in addition to that rise, they will also increase prices because if you put the whole thing together, obviously not including your work yesterday, this doesn't do it. But in total, it's billions of pounds that stores have stolen, and they respond by putting their prices up. So my point again is, those you are seeking to help actually are hurt the first because they are the poorest, Mr. Swithin. Do you see that economics?
There's billions of pounds that these supermarkets are making off the backs of hard-working people in this country.
No, and I don't know whether you're deliberately choosing to ignore the point that they're not going to take a cut in profits. This will not have... All they will do, I'll try again, is if they continually have tins of baked beans stolen, they will put a penny on the tin of baked beans. And the poor pensioner or the single mum or whatever it might be that you say you're campaigning for, they will be hit first, won't they, Mr. Swithland?
Well, then it's the responsibility of our government to step in and make prices affordable for people in this country.
Right, so now you want the government to set prices in Sainsbury's and Tesco's, do you?
I want the government to do their job and look after the people in this country and not help the rich.
How can they do their job? How will this help the government, quote, do its job as regards setting supermarket prices?
These protests are highlighting the issue that are facing this country. There's millions of people, like your viewers listening right now, who are struggling to put food on the table. Yes. And the government aren't doing enough to help those people. And instead, they're allowing these corporations to make record-breaking profits.
Right. You would want... I don't think we're going to get very far, because I don't think you see the economic sense. I think you don't accept the government can't set the price of a tin of baked beans. You think they should.
No, it's not about the economical argument, and I understand where you're coming from.
Right.
But there's a bigger picture here. There's a lot of people in this country that are struggling, and you know people in this country are struggling because you speak about it on your show.
I do, absolutely. And that's why I think the struggles will continue. OK, lastly, because I don't sense we're going to have any point of accord on this, will there be more demonstrations planned? If so, how many?
There will be more protesters planned, and if people are interested, please check out takebackpower.net to join us.
All right, Luke Swithland, spokesperson for Take Back Power. We're just going to have to absolutely disagree on that, but I'm grateful for your input. 7:43. Khaled is in Leicester to talk about that Al-Quds demo. Your view on that, Khaled? Why do people support the Iranian regime? Good morning.
Good morning. You have to delay the news. Anyway, so the thing is, look, the protests are realistically... It's quite genuinely against oppression, against killing of innocents.
Well, hang on, then why would they support the killing of innocents in Iran?
I don't know. You
just decided it's about the killing of innocents. Iran itself admits that 5,000 people... Others say it's more like 30,000. So why would they support that regime?
No, they shouldn't be supporting that regime. But the point is...
They are, Khaled. That's why I'm... Why are they supporting that regime?
Nick, with all due respect, right, the thing is, we should all be united against oppression and killing of innocents.
Great, so you are equally opposed to those demonstrators then, because you don't want innocent Iranians killed, just as you don't want those killed in Gaza or anywhere else.
Of course.
Good, done. We've agreed. Cut it. It's 7:45. Coming up after the news, we get into other matters, and what level of support should be offered by the United Kingdom as regards sending battleships, precious few that we have, to the Strait of Hormuz.
We're always there for NATO. We're helping them with Ukraine. Doesn't affect us, but we've helped them. It'd be interesting to see what country wouldn't help us.
If I ran communications for the President of the United States, can we find a bit of this jumbo jet where we can bloody well soundproof it so we can hear what the man or woman is saying? It is ridiculous. We take the world's media around it and they can't... He's talking about we're there for NATO, aren't they? Are there to help us. We'll put that and other points to a senior government minister who's joining us. We'll also be talking about how to unlock new jobs. Heard that before. 7:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says he's in talks with several nations about policing the Strait of Hormuz as his war against Iran continues to impact the world economy. Keir Starmer is due to set out support for households struggling with the cost of heating oil, which has soared due to the conflict in the Middle East. And antibiotics are being given out to some students in the Canterbury area following an outbreak of meningitis at the University of Kent. LBC weather. Early showers will gradually ease, but cloud building from the west bringing further rain to much of the UK. Later, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 for the M26 round to Junction 6 for Godstone after an accident earlier, so all the lanes are open now. In Cricklewood, it's heavy on the A41 Hendon Way going into town. It's partly blocked because of an accident at Cricklewood Lane. There are keys in North Watford on the A41 Cone Way southbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident after the Dome roundabout. It's slow in Northwood. Joel Street southbound is partly blocked between Tolcarn Road and Colchester Road. That's because a bus has broken down. In Clerkenwell, Rawstorne Street eastbound is closed. That's because of an investigation by the fire services between St John Street and Paget Street. And on the tube, there are minor delays on the entire Victoria line. That's because of cancellations.
This is LBC.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Come to our conversation concerning global events in a moment, but we're staying with the UK. We're staying with that Al Quds demonstration on Saturday and the counter-demonstration in London, the other side of the River Thames. Mike and Crawley, who I remind you, of course, was in policing. And I'm asking why people support the Iranian regime. He says this country has a small hardcore of disenchanted who will turn out to event cause any trouble. And unfortunately, like some populist politicians, they will promise support to any group with a genuine interest to cloak themselves respectability. The reality is they simply want disorder. The problem the justice system has is that due to widely publicised failings and constraints, the vast majority of agitators believe they will suffer little or no punishment. And in the main, that is true. Right, we'll have more on that in just a moment, but I'm told I can now join a senior government minister. We, of course, are going to be hearing from the Prime Minister a little bit later. We might ask our minister now about that, but he's here initially to talk about a big employment drive, particularly among younger people. The man of whom I speak is Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, of course, Labour MP, Pat McFadden. Good to have you on again, Mr. McFadden. It's been too long. I trust you and your family are well. What are we hearing today, then, on the employment front? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Nick. I'm announcing three things today to help young people find more jobs and more training opportunities. The first one is a hiring bonus for employers to take on a young person who's been out of work for 6 months or more. If they do that, we will pay a hiring bonus of £3,000. The second change is on the apprenticeship system, where we're going to give small and medium-sized employers a hiring bonus of £2,000 to take on a young apprentice. And we're doing that because youth apprenticeship starts have declined by 40% in the last 10 years. And the third change is for the long-term young unemployed. We've already had a youth guarantee aimed at the 18 to 21-year-olds. We're able to expand the age range of that today to include 22 to 24-year-olds as well, so that any young person out of work for 18 months or more who can't get a job after all the training opportunities that we're going to offer will get a paid subsidised job 25 hours a week at national minimum wage rates. And it's all aimed, Nick, at ensuring that we do not have a young generation drifting away from the labour market without the chance to have the sense of pride and purpose and identity, as well as the wage that comes with having a job.
What will look like success? How many jobs do you hope will be created by this initiative, Mr. McFadden?
Well, let me give you some numbers on this. Mm-hmm. So we think on the hiring bonus, we can offer this to about 20,000 young people a year. Mm-hmm. We think on the apprenticeship changes, we can aim for up to 50,000 more youth apprenticeship starts. And on the long-term young unemployed, we are looking at up to 90,000 paid subsidised jobs over the next 3 years. So you can do the maths on that. It all stacks up to a couple of 100,000 training or work opportunities for young people over the next few years.
And yet there will be many people listening to this, Minister, who will say, how can we believe a word this man is saying? Because since this Labour administration came to power, you'll be aware better than I, youth unemployment is at an 11-year high at 16.1%. And that is since you came to power, Mr. McFadden.
It is too high, but it's a long-term problem, Nick. Youth employment has actually never reached the levels pre-financial crash at any time in the last 15 years.
Right, but you've got it to an 11-year high already.
the rate of young people not in education, employment or training went up by 250,000 in the last couple of years of the Tory government.
Yes,
but actually,
I repeat, Mr. McFadden, you know, you've got to an 11-year
high. Do something about it.
Yes, indeed, and everybody wants that. But it is, and I wish this nothing but success, because it is appalling that some young folk really have nothing to get up in the morning for. But why should these do it when so far everything you and your colleagues have done has actually taken it higher, Mr. McFadden?
The line's gone dead.
Can you hear me, Mr. McFadden?
Nick, I lost you for a moment there.
Can you hear me, Pat?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, Pat, just challenge you again with that figure. How can we take anything when, under your watch, it has gone up to that 11-year high at 16.1%? Pat?
Well, we are concerned about it, but I repeat, Nick, this is a long-term problem, and the difference is that we're now doing something about it. I want to give young people hope. I want to give them opportunity. I'm often asked on shows like this, what are you going to do about welfare reform? Well, let me tell you, the best form of welfare reform is opportunity and work. Not just a welfare state, but a working state. And that's what I'm talking about this morning with these proposals and in the speech that I'm going to make later on this morning here at Waltham Forest College.
OK, we might be battling a bad line, so let's move to other matters while we can. What will determine the level of support that the United Kingdom will offer to President Trump as he asks for assistance in the Strait of Hormuz? Mr. McFadden.
Well, the Prime Minister has been clear that we're not protagonists this war. He talked to President Trump about this last night. Of course, we all want energy prices to come down. The best way for that to happen is for this war to conclude as soon as possible. So we'll keep up a constant dialogue with the United States and with other allies on this. But we have not sought to be protagonists in this war, and the Prime Minister has been clear about that since this all began a few weeks ago.
Can you envisage a time where Royal Navy ships would be sent to the Strait of Hormuz to ensure safe passage of oil?
Well, I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down. And our decisions will always be informed by what's in Britain's national interest. That starts with not being a protagonist in this war. But of course, we'll do what we can to protect our citizens and our military assets in the region too.
Isn't there a tremendous way we could ease that pressure by going and trying to expand North Sea oil production, Minister?
Well, if we took that decision today, it wouldn't come on stream for another 10 years. So I know there's a debate about that, but it wouldn't make any difference to the current situation.
You don't think, though, that now, at a time such as this, we need better energy security?
Well, we do need energy security, and we are investing in our energy security. And we've now had two experiences of steep rises in prices as a result of global factors. So it's important that we do invest in our energy security. And look, oil and gas will remain a big part of that mix for many years to come. North Sea production has been going down for some years. Employment in the industry has been going down for many years, but it's still an important asset, and it will be for many years to come.
All right, Pat, I'm going to leave it there because the line is a bit dodgy. Thanks for joining us. That's Pat McFadden, Secretary of State for Work and Pension. Good luck with your initiative trying to pledge extra jobs for young people. He's going to be at Waltham Forest College later today, so we'll bring you a report on that. And let's get into the calls on this. 4 minutes before 8 is the time. Tom's in Chelmsford. Tom, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, one way to say several problems. If a young person between the ages of 18 and 22 are not employed, not in training, not in education, why don't you conscript them into the military?
Why would you want to put a young person into the army or Air Force if they don't want to go?
Well, for a start, it teaches some self-discipline, some self-respect, and a routine of getting up in the mornings.
If we have quite a small army now, I think they'd rather have people like the professional soldiers who want to be there, Tom, no?
I'd rather have £1 million, but you've got to be realistic. If you want to fill the boats up, you want to fill the regiments up, conscript. It worked before.
Yes, it worked before, of course, in a time of war. And while I absolutely take on board what you say, and it's not healthy if you don't have anything together, I don't think a conscript army or Air Force or Navy is the way forward. But, Tom, it's a view. Thank you. In a related story, which we might give you more on, actually, I need to tell you the number of jobless young people citing health problems as the reason they're not working has risen sharply. The share of 16 to 24-year-olds and rather disparaging term, but it is, I don't suppose it does sum it up, neat, not in education, employment or training. A report of work limit condition in Britain has surged by 70% in the last 10 years. This is a foundation, the Health Foundation think tank, revealing those feelings. We might come back to that later, but I've got a minute to feature some of your texts and emails that are coming in concerning that Al-Quds demo and indeed the other demo. This comes from Robin Chertsey. Anyone who supports the Iran regime obviously doesn't like the British way of life, so they should be given an option. We'll fly them free to Iran, where they can live under the regime they love so much, or stay here and shut up. I don't think we'd ever want... They're allowed to demonstrate, Rob. They are allowed to demonstrate. All I'm questioning is why they would demonstrate in favour of a regime that kills its own people, which actually no one's been able to answer. But let's talk about youth employment or unemployment. Mike's in Liverpool. Mike, you're on the radio. Hello, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my question is, it's great offering out all these apprenticeships and hiring bonuses to employers. But the challenge is, when the cost of living is so high and the current wage rate seems to be causing real financial challenges for people, especially young people, and you can't promise them a house, you can't promise them enough money to afford to raise a family.
No.
So what is all this incentive for in the long term? Because these young people will be looking at the long term. And if there's nothing at the end of that, this is all...
But, Mike, I don't know about you. When I first started work, I couldn't afford a house. Obviously, it was a very, very low wage. But fortunately, I managed to sort of work my way up the ladder. And then I was able to afford my first house. Isn't it the rung on the ladder, no? Do you think?
I think that world is well gone, Nick, and I think we can all accept that. I mean, you don't just have to look at any evidence collected over the past 10 years, speak to any young person in their 30s and even 40s at the moment, especially in the London area, who might be on wages as high as £50,000 and are still struggling to make ends meet.
Mike, you probably are right about that. I'm afraid we're over time, but I'm glad you got me on. It might be something we return to. Thanks for your input. Have yourself a good day up there. The music means the conversation moves on. What level of support should the United Kingdom offer or not offer as President Trump's asked for more ships in the Strait of Hormuz? Plus, to London, the moment a Sikh owner of a London-based Indian restaurant was detained by officers over the weekend. His crime is to not serve halal meat. So the peaceful restaurant owner is arrested. Meanwhile, the angry mob of pro-halal campaigners outside are ignored. And that's policing, is it? The Met refusing to comment. 8 o'clock news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, President Trump says he's in talks with seven nations to create a coalition to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has effectively closed the waterway, which is a crucial route for global oil supplies. Mr. Trump has also warned that NATO faces a very bad future if members don't help to unblock it. Cabinet Minister Pat McFadden has just been asked by Nick if the UK could send ships to help police the strait.
I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down. Our decisions will always be informed by what's in Britain's national interest. That starts with not being a protagonist in this war. But of course, we'll do what we can to protect our citizens and our military assets in the region too.
Sir Keir Starmer will promise to help households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in the Middle East. The Prime Minister is expected to say later that helping families is his first priority. Plans to help those who use oil to heat their homes will also be set out, as they're not covered by the energy price cap. The Metropolitan Police says it's investigating anti-Israeli chants led by one half of the punk duo Bob Villain at a demonstration in London. 12 arrests were made at the Al-Quds Day protest and counter-protest yesterday. Antibiotics are being provided for some students at the University of Kent in Canterbury following an outbreak of meningitis. 2 people have died, 11 others are seriously ill in hospital. Employers are to be paid £3,000 for every young person they hire who've been looking for a job for more than 6 months. Ministers want to bring down the rising number of people aged between 18 to 24 who are not in work, training or education. And one battle after another was the big winner at this year's Academy Awards. It took home 6 Oscars in total, including Best Picture. Jessie Buckley won Best Actress for her portrayal of William Shakespeare's wife in Hamnet, while Michael B. Jordan was named Best Actor for portraying twin brothers in the period vampire movie Sinners.
Thank you, everybody in this room and everybody at home, for supporting me over my career. I feel it. I know you guys want me to do well, and I want to do that because you guys bet on me.
In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,261. It closed down 44 on Friday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather mainly dry to start, but rain moving in for much of the country by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? I don't know.
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy. Yeah. Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 8:04, Monday, March the 16th. Coming up in this hour is President Trump's request for team effort to open the Strait of Hormuz. What level of support should the United Kingdom offer? In other news to that horrific story is deaths from meningitis down in Kent. Bharat Pankhani is a public health expert. He's at the University of Exeter. He told LBC yesterday...
Usually we get 2 or 3, so to have 13, there has definitely been a large, what we would call, spreader event.
The polling that reveals the scale of anti-Semitism, a crisis on UK university and college campuses, and we will have more of that restaurateur in Fulham by the Met on the weekend.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
To the latest strain on our special relationship. And as if it wasn't enough, a couple of weeks ago when the United States asked for permission to use UK-owned air bases and we declined, and at the time I said that was a mistake, I do not want to race into war. But I do think if you have a country, the United States, that's so important to the defence of your own citizens, you have to facilitate. And when you have your own citizens under attack, you have to facilitate that. So that's all that, as far as I ever wanted to go. But where do we go now? As the President, Donald Trump, seems to ask for all his NATO allies, including the UK, of course, to send warships to help him, Trump, and the US Navy protect the Strait of Hormuz. Now, here's an interesting point. The price of a gallon of gas or petrol in the United States is coming in at just south of $4, just south of $5, $5. That's the highest it's been in many years. And with the midterms, as they call them, almost just around the corner, around the corner's corner, November, that is going to, because everybody, pretty much everywhere on the planet, you most often vote with your wallet or your purse. And if President Trump is staring at $5 a gallon, he's in a world of pain in the midterm. So he needs that oil, I was going to say, start flowing through the Strait of Hormuz. Not the oil, but he needs the convoys to start sailing through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, I mentioned President Trump was speaking. I'm sorry, you have to listen. I don't know why they can't find him an area where you can actually hear what he says. Was speaking on board Air Force One.
We're always there for NATO. We're helping them with Ukraine. And any kind of notion in between us doesn't affect us. We've helped them. It'd be interesting to see what country wouldn't help us.
I'm demanding that these countries come in and protect their own territory because it is their territory. It's the place from which they get their energy. And they should come and they should help us protect it.
You know, you'd do better to hear him on the pilot's tannoy, wouldn't you? It is extraordinary, the advances we have in mankind or humankind or whatever we learn to say these days. We can't talk to a president clearly. Anyway, about 20 minutes or so, a little under, I was speaking with Senior Cabinet Minister, Work and Pensions Secretary Pat McFadden, and I asked him, what support will the UK offer to President Trump?
Well, the Prime Minister has been clear that we're not protagonists in this war. He talked to President Trump about this last night. Of course, we all want energy prices to come down. The best way for that to happen is for this war to conclude as soon as possible. So we'll keep up a constant dialogue with the United States and with other allies on this. But we have not sought to be protagonists in this war, and the Prime Minister has been clear about that since this all began a few weeks ago.
Can you envisage a time where Royal Navy ships would be sent to the Strait of Hormuz to ensure safe passage of oil?
Well, I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down. And our decisions will always be informed by what's in Britain's national interest. That starts with not being a protagonist in this war, but of course we'll do what we can to protect our citizens and our military assets in the region too.
Pat McFadden, don't rule anything in or don't rule anything out, which means the politicians haven't actually got any idea currently. Let's turn to someone who I'm sure has got an idea, Alan Lord West, former Chief of Defence Intelligence, Head of the Royal Navy and Security Minister. Man never short of opinions in these matters. Joins me now. Good to have you on, Lord West. To date, how would you characterise the response of the United Kingdom to our supposed closest ally? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not exactly sure what not a protagonist means. I mean, basically, once the Iranians had started attacking our allies, and indeed attacking us, we became part of the war, and they've always seen us as the little Satan, the Iranians. They didn't like us, whereas the Americans are the big Satan. So being not a protagonist is a slightly strange... I'm not good at English language lit. But as far as I'm concerned, we are now at war with Iran because of what's going on in the region. And there is no doubt that actually the hold they've got over the area is the fact they can close the Straits of Hormuz. Why the Americans didn't realize this was going to happen, I find absolutely extraordinary. The reason we had had forces out there for years was because of the possibility of the Straits being closed at any stage. But quick as a flash, when things started happening, we withdrew our forces from that area. Goodness knows why. There's a lack of geostrategic thought with maritime power. When you send your ships towards the sound of the guns, and we didn't. We took every single one of them away. And that's extraordinary. But the Straits are so important to the globe that I think we should be willing to be involved. And I hope that we're in discussion, I'm sure we are, with the American Navy at the moment. They'll be looking at the sort of force they need to keep it open, and it's going to be big, and it'll need a lot of escorts and things. But we've got very few escorts. What we have got is great expertise in mine hunting. And we have developed remote ways of doing this, so we don't put the mine hunters into the fields. I'm not sure how far that's got, how good we are, but we certainly should offer to do that to help them, because keeping the Straits open is crucial for the global economy.
I've read your comments in some newspapers over the last 2 weeks or so, Lord West. We don't really have a lot of kit. I hear what you say about mine hunters, but we don't really have a lot of kit or assets to send, though, do we, Lord West?
No, absolutely not. I mean, over a number of years, we've cut and cut and cut. I mean, my American friends who are in the Navy and in the intelligence world, they all rate us and they still like us, but they're horrified how the scale and level of our forces have been cut so much. And it's come home to roost. I mean, a lot of us have been saying this now, including, I think, on your show. Mm. For 14 years I've been bagging on. And it's now come home to roost. And that it's dangerous and embarrassing.
Lastly, as the former security minister and chief of defense intelligence, can you see a way that that Donald Trump, everyone can navigate their way out of this, Lord West?
Well, it's very difficult to see it, because what's interesting, Trump, I mean, Trump is, you can see he's actually panicking now. Because he sort of thought, oh, I'll do a big hit, it'll be like Venezuela, and off I go. And he hadn't thought all this through in great detail. And he says, oh, I'll stop. But of course, the Iranians, the only thing important, the Iranian leadership, and we said this in our Intelligence and Security Committee report last autumn, it ought to be read by everybody, is the fact that the regime is more important than dead bodies, more important than economy, more important than anything, and they have got a vote. Trump doesn't seem to think they have. He might well say the war's over. They might say, no, it's not.
Grateful for your time as ever. Thank you. Lord West, former Chief of Defence Intelligence, head of the Royal Navy and served as Security Minister. Listening to that at 12 minutes after 8. Let's bring a little conversation. Karin von Hippel, who's former Director General of RUSI, that's the Royal United Services Institute, now chairs defence practice at Arden Strategies, that's Arden Strategies, and joins me now. What advice, what counsel would you provide to the Prime Minister as regards additional support to the United States? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I think it's very difficult for every country that Trump has requested assistance from, including China, by the way, because, of course, you know, one day he says, we don't need you, you're too late. And then the next day we do need you, which I agree with Lord West. There is a bit of a panic. I think it's in every country's interest to do as much as they can to help. But many of them will be reluctant to get too much involved in this war, so they will not get attacked even more than they already are getting attacked by the Iranians. So I think if they can maintain their defensive posture, which the Brits have done and a few other countries have done, that'll be important. But, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, Trump is telling everybody they've won, and then he's saying, well, we need your help. And it's kind of confusing.
To the point that Lord West just made, that once you have British assets or indeed British military personnel or British civilians under attack in the region, you are effectively at war anyway. How would you respond?
Well, I mean, I would not quibble with a military former First Sea Lord about terminology, but I don't see the Brits going on the offensive. I see them going on the defensive and protecting assets and people. So I don't see them in this war at all. And if certainly they're not to the same degree as Israel and the United States are. Yeah, I guess I don't fully agree on that.
Lastly, to supply mine hunters or some kind of naval assets, is that offense or defense in your book, Karin von Hippel?
Well, that would still be defensive. It would be to try to open up the straits and to try to keep the traffic going, because, you know, everyone's feeling this at the global level. The price of oil and gas have shot through the roof. And, of course, Trump doesn't like that more than anybody else. Of course, the Chinese, it'll be interesting to see what the Chinese do, because Trump is threatening to cancel the summit he has with President Xi Jinping at the end of this month. And most Chinese ships or oil heading for China is getting through. Most of that kind of oil is getting through the Straits of Hormuz because Iranians are letting it through for China. So I'm be very curious to see what the Chinese end up doing, and if Trump does cancel this upcoming summit that he has with China.
Grateful for your input. Karin von Hippel, you were Director General of RUSI. You're now Chair of Defence Practice at Arden Strategies. Coming up after news, we'll come to your reactions. Calls coming in already. And also this story, the survey that's put out, the story that shows that anti-Semitism is normalised on university colleges' campuses. One in five students, 20%, would not be open to house sharing with a Jewish student. Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson addressed this back in October.
I'm being clear with university vice-chancellors. There can be no place for harassment and intimidation. Universities can and must act on that.
We'll have more on that after this. It is 8.15 LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK will keep up a constant dialogue with the US after President Trump called for allies to help in reopening a key shipping lane in the Middle East. Sir Keir Starmer will promise to help households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in Iran. And antibiotics are being provided for some students at the University of Kent in Canterbury following an outbreak of meningitis. LBC weather, mainly dry to start, but rain moving in for much of the country by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's heavy on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 for the M26 round to Junction 6 for Godstone after an accident earlier, so all the lanes are open. In Cricklewood, it's slow on the A41 Hendon Way going into town after an accident earlier at Cricklewood Lane. It's slow in Islington. St John's Street is closed in both directions between Rosebery Avenue and Spencer Street. That's because of an investigation by the fire services. There are delays in the centre of town. The A4, the Piccadilly Underpass, is closed in both directions all week for roadworks, so there are queues at Hyde Park Corner. On the tube, there are severe delays on the District Line westbound from Upminster to Earls Court after a passenger was taken ill earlier. And there are minor delays on the entire Victoria Line. That's because of some cancellations.
This is LBC.
Maria wasn't mastering the art of macaron in Paris by accident. She booked a baking class on Get Your Guide. Fate didn't have the Brooks sipping matcha with a real tea master in Tokyo. They booked that on Get Your Guide too. And luck didn't have John learning the difference between bow and stern on a Majorcan boat cruise. You guessed it. Get Your Guide.
The best parts of travel don't just happen. You make them happen when you book your tours, tickets and activities on the Get Your Guide app.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents, see toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Hardly surprising. A lot of you want to have your say about the level of support, or, of course, lack of support that should be provided. Stuart in Manchester phoned in first. What should the UK do now, Stuart? Can it be turned still defence if we were to send whatever ships we might have down to the Strait of Hormuz? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I believe we should send our navy there to support. We can still maintain our defensive stance. But at the end of the day, we're defending our resources, and not only our resources, it's Europe's resource as well. We don't have to be there on the offensive. We don't have to be attacking, but we should make sure the oil's getting through and support our ally as well.
So we have a mine hunter or an escort vessel or whatever it might be, and that comes under attack from the Iranian Navy, the Iranian Army, Iranian Air Force, whatever it might be. What does it do?
It defends itself. That's what it's there for, and it has to do that. But it doesn't mean you then have to turn around and start bombing the capital or sending jets anything like that. You take out the direct threat, you get the oil through, and you keep that lifeline flowing.
And you don't think that's dragging us closer into actually being at war?
I mean, it's always gonna have a risk of if something does happen and the destroyer does unfortunately go down. But at the same time, there's so many layers to this. Where if we don't support the US and we're constantly being told about the threats all over the world from Iran, from China, from Russia, if we do stand here and let America do this on their own, and they turn around and say they're going to stop supporting us, and in 6 months, Russia escalates or China gets involved, and then we're stood there saying, America, you're going to help us. We don't have a leg to stand on. It's a relationship. It goes both ways. You don't necessarily have to support everything they're doing.
Stuart, thank you. David in South Woodford, what would level of support would be acceptable to you? Good morning. David? Nope, we'll move on to other matters. While we're trying to get David on the line, let's go to we haven't got to come to him in a moment, because I want to come to the next guest who can talk about this other story. And I mentioned this survey done by the Union of Jewish Students calling for urgent action to combat anti-Semitism on campus following a publication of its Time for Change report. There are a number of headlines, but the most concerning of which is that it would appear anti-Semitism is becoming increasingly normalised on our university and college campuses, with one in five students, or 20%, reporting they would not be open to house sharing with a Jewish student. Let's turn to Ruth now. Baroness Deitch, former independent adjudicator for higher education and former principal of St Anne's College in Oxford. And I understand, thank you very much for coming on, Baroness. I understand you were present at a meeting in the House of Lords that was attended by some Jewish students. What did you learn? Good morning.
Good morning. What we learned was even worse than what you've been able to tell us right now. We had six students, and I know there are many more, telling us about the most awful things happening on campus. And I should say that it's not about Gaza. We know that Gaza is a terrible situation. But what the students are doing to their Jewish colleagues goes far beyond that. It's pure anti-Semitism. For example, we were told that in a project group, they decided to call it No Jews Allowed. Or, for example, other students are climbing on top of a Jewish house shouting, Dirty Jews, and warning Jews live here and trying to break in and calling for death and killing. It's absolutely appalling. And, you know, this isn't about Jews. This is about a terrible condition that our universities find themselves in. It could be any other minority. But these universities, we've got the greatest universities in the world. And look what they have sunk to, that this hate and violence and denial of access to academia is in the heart of these wonderful universities. And nobody's doing anything about it.
Baroness, my research tells me that you attended one of those great universities. It would have been a few years back. Were you ever exposed to any degree of anti-Semitism?
No, it was fine. It was fine when I was there.
What's happened, Baroness?
Well, it started before Gaza, as I said. I think it's part of this widespread anti-colonialism, where Israel is completely wrongly regarded as a colonial power. It started also, I think, with religious teaching. Universities have hosted hate speakers who preach that Jews should be killed and that they are inferior. There's a lot of that going on. There's one lecturer at UCL who put out the terrible medieval trope that Jews kill people at Passover and use their blood to bake into pancakes. I mean, I've never heard anything so shocking and lying. And how can a university lecturer say that? They've been imbued with this. I don't know where from. Religious teaching, I think.
Sorry to talk over you, Baroness. What needs to happen now?
Well, first of all, the OFS must get a grip. If that's what the OFS is for, regulating, it must do so. Secondly, we in Parliament must summon the vice-chancellors to appear before select committees and tell us why they have done nothing to handle these complaints, which is something else the students said. And thirdly, we must ensure that young people are taught about anti-Semitism and what it means to be Jewish, not just about the Holocaust, but the whole structure and civilization of being Jewish, so that they understand that we're all part of humanity.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. Do let us know the progress you make with summoning some of those vice-chancellors. Ruth, now Baroness Deitch, former independent adjudicator of higher education, former principal of St. Anne's College in Oxford. The OFS, by the way, is Office for Students, which is the independent regulator of higher education in England, and that's why the Baroness quoted it in that context. 8:25. Now, we're asking what level of support the United Kingdom should offer, if any. We'll try again. David in South Woodford. Do you hear me, David?
Hi, Nick.
Yes, sir. Your point. Morning.
Firstly, the likes of France, Italy, India, they've actually negotiated direct with Iran to allow their ships to go through. So that's what we need to do. Japan and Australia refuse to send their navies, and they're America's allies.
Where have you got that for France, that they've allowed French oil through?
You can actually, I think it's on Reuters. Okay. Your colleagues can check it up.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Modi is a close ally of Israel.
Yes.
He was in Israel a few days before this war broke out. And it's he's negotiated his oil tankers to go out. Why can't we negotiate? There's no military solution to this.
I think, as Lord West said, we are, although we're not necessarily in lockstep with the United States currently, they do see us as the little Satan to the America's big Satan.
They may do, but we can negotiate. If Modi can do that after visiting Israel and supporting Israel, which is Iran's enemy.
Do you honestly think Keir Starmer has the skill set to do that?
Possibly not, but I think if Japan and Australia, who are allies of America, say no, we're not sending an army, that means there is no military solution. This is America and Netanyahu's mess. Then to stop this war and let the rest of the world live.
But, sorry, you wouldn't then allow American aircraft to use RAF military bases?
No, they can use bases, but we don't send our navy to the Strait of Hormuz. They can use bases. I don't have a problem with that. But sending our navy into the Strait of Hormuz, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, and try and move to a negotiation, as you say France has done. I will try and check that out during the news. But thank you, David. I'm glad we got you on a better line. Jason Marilyn. Jason, how far should support go? Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Look, if we send the ships in, we're definitely getting more involved with this war. But I don't see what choice we've got. These ships have to be coming through. We can't let them stop. But my concern is that the UK, we couldn't even stop protesters on the M25. So maybe we should ask the Americans for help there.
Yes, I hear what you say, but it may even actually just be a signal of support, isn't it? Because I actually don't know how much military kit we have to send, but it's an intention of where we want to be seen, isn't it? That's the reality.
Absolutely.
Jason.
We can't be seen to be distancing ourselves from the States. We need America more now than ever because of the state of our army.
Jason, thank you. We'll have more calls on that. Now, we've just finished a conversation about the concerns of anti-Semitism on university colleges and campuses. It has been a live issue for a number of years. Not, I'm delighted to say, when the guest we were speaking with, Baroness Deitch, attended Oxford University, but it has been a problem and it's getting worse. Steve's in Watford was listening to that. What action needs to be taken, Steve? Good morning.
Well, I'm surprised that we haven't had the police involved in this now, Nick. And I was just saying to your director, colleague, your yep. producer,
yep.
That this has, unfortunately, nasty overtones of the start of Nazi Germany in the 30s, when Adolf Hitler was coming to prominence,
mm-hmm.
Where businesses run by the Jews were attacked and destroyed, and the Jewish people were beaten up in the streets. It has got serious consequences. I'm not Jewish myself, mm-hmm. but I do know a couple of Jewish people, and I have every sympathy with the population of this country of the Jewish faith and the appalling attitude that's been shown on our streets, and these marches being allowed to continue.
And on to the point of universities, this is where, of course, people, young people go to broaden their minds, to get a greater education, to mix with other young people so they can set themselves out. That is one of the great, I think, aspects or benefits of university. You socialise with other people, and you have this extraordinary, irrational hatred of someone simply because of their faith.
Yeah, I totally agree, Nick. I mean, can you imagine if this happening to other faiths? It wouldn't be allowed to happen. For some reason, it's allowed to happen against the poor people of this particular faith. And I have every sympathy for every Jewish person in this country who may be considering, and a lot of people of that faith are considering, leaving this country.
I agree with you. Steve, thank you. Now, if we're talking about problems with religion, after news, we're coming to an extraordinary story about the owner of a Sikh owner of a London-based Indian restaurant. It's over in Hammersmith in West London. This man has a colourful, some would argue, a dubious past. His restaurant was targeted by pro-halal, or I understand it's called pro-halali, meat campaigners because he declines to serve halal meat. The police response was that he, the restaurateur, was arrested. Now, the media have been trying to get a comment from the Metropolitan Police as to what the grounds of the arrest for some time. Again, I accept the restaurateur has, in some cases, some pretty despicable views. But how have we come to a situation where the Metropolitan Police can arrest someone and not give the media for the reason? And if he chooses to have a restaurant without halal meat, surely he should be allowed to do that without those sort of demos? We'll explore this rather complex issue after this. 8:30, breakfast with Enoch Ferrar here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK is in constant dialogue with the US after President Trump's call for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Pat McFadden says decisions will always be informed by Britain's national interests, which starts with not being a protagonist in the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer is due to set out support for families struggling with the cost of heating oil, which has soared due to the conflict in the Middle East. More than 1.5 million households rely on fuel which isn't covered by the energy price cap. And the UK Health Security Agency says it'll provide antibiotics for some students in the Canterbury area after an outbreak of meningitis. Two people have died, including a student at the University of Kent. LBC weather mainly dry to start, but rain will move into much of the country by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
They have no Navy, they have no Air Force, and they have no leadership. We could call it a tremendous success right now, or we could go further, and we're going to go further.
Hear every side of the story.
Why do people think that Trump wants to bring democracy to Iranians while he's dismantling democracy in his own country?
There is a general feeling within our government that defence is something that we have to vastly up because of what's happening in the world, mm-hmm. and they will find a way of doing it.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family.
how they're getting on, if they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
To a story where, frustratingly, we don't know a lot more than we do know. And I'm afraid that has to be laid fair and square at the door of one authority, and that's what the Metropolitan Police. So what do we know so far? And I'm grateful the news sources that we have to go to on this are the Hindustan Times and other newspapers, because for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to be making much traction here. Possibly because the Met, again, for whatever reason, declined to know what told us exactly what goes on. But here's what we do know. There is a restaurant in Hammersmith that is run by a man called Harman Singh Kapoor, who has put up some rather ugly and derogatory social media posts in the past about the Muslim faith. Support messages I do not support in any way, shape or form. He also makes it a point of his restaurant that he will not serve halal meat. In fact, he proudly says that he will not serve halal meat. This has made him the target of some demonstrations by pro-halalis, if that is the expression. Again, I take that from the Hindustan Times. I don't know. But those who like halal meat, some of whom are believed to be Muslims. We don't know for certain because no one was asked their faith, but certainly the fact that they are pro-halal. So we have that situation. There is video that I've seen. And I'm just saying by my colleague, yes, it says on the sign at the door of this restaurant, which I won't name because I don't want it getting in any more violence up there. Proudly, we don't sell halal. OK, proudly, we don't sell halal. We're talking about London, by the way, in 2026. Now, the restaurateur, again, I will say, has some rather disobliging opinions. But to me, he is allowed to have a restaurant where he does not sell halal meat. Not in the eyes of others who've demonstrated. The demonstration kicked off on Saturday. Police were in attendance. And he, the restaurateur, was arrested. Now, the demo outside is pretty ugly. Most demos normally are. Clearly, no one is going to enter the restaurant. You're not going to take your family. Oh, I tell you what, let's go out for an Indian meal. Oh, let's go there where people are shouting and screaming and they're kicking off outside. Oh, yeah, we'll definitely take the kids in there. And then there appears to be some aggression from the demonstrators. The police obviously are called. And their response is to nick the restaurateur. My understanding is that the media have been asking since Saturday why he was arrested. Response, has there come none. No reaction. So there are two areas to discuss. This restaurateur, who, again, I am not carrying a brief for, and some of the comments he's made, but I will support the fact that if he doesn't want to sell halal meat, he should be able to. And certainly, the Met. Is there any chance, you've got legions of press officers, is there any chance one of them could put in a call to the relevant Nick? Oh, no, sorry, they've closed them all. That won't work, will it? Or could we possibly find the duty sergeant and find out what on earth is going on? So here's the moment the restaurateur, Harman Singh Kapoor, is detained by officers. Subsequently, the restaurateur has posted negligence, harassment and false arrest by Met Police UK. I was arrested because I vowed to protect my family against any threat from criminals and radicals. The Met Police refused to help us and failed us on many occasions. I have right under common law to defend me and my family against any threat. Under pressure from halalis, there's that expression again, they arrested me for carrying my religious dagger, which is my birthright and permitted under British law. This is, of course, the kirpan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is one of the five articles of faith. Right, that is what I know. I admit there's much I don't know, but let's get into it and respect everybody's sensibilities and feelings. Let's have a grown-up conversation, as politicians like to say. Robert's in St. Neots. Robert, your reaction to what we do know on this story. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. Puzzled with this one, because I don't know why the Met's not doing its job, but there we go.
Do you think there's a little bit of the media pressure on them, where if in the past they've had a lot of accusations of racism and stuff? I mean, I say that. My wife works for the Met.
Right.
And she's Sikh. So I do know what goes on to a certain degree there.
Okay.
Not everything's quite savoury.
No, I'm sure it's not.
But also, being a Sikh, he's, you know, this guy's got a choice, hasn't he, if he serves it or not?
I totally agree, and that's why I can't work out. And again, if only the Met would respond. If he's offered any form of aggression, then we've got problems. It appears, he's just got a restaurant where they don't want him to serve non-halal food, and they've kicked off outside. So I don't quite see why he gets nicked. And your wife would know far better than I, because is she an actual serving officer?
No, she's police staff.
Police staff. Okay, well, she still does a very important job. And I would imagine she would agree. Look, those blokes who get called up, they're in a very difficult position. They've got people shouting at them the minute they arrive. They're being filmed literally under their noses, these coppers.
Absolutely.
It's very, very tense, but they've got to think what they're doing. And they are able to call back to the base and ask the sergeant what they think we should do.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, if I opened a restaurant and I chose not to serve, I don't know, kosher meat...
Yep.
Is that wrong?
No. You should be able to serve kosher or non-kosher. Halal, non-halal. You should be able to choose.
I mean, I know I'm a little bit biased because my wife is Sikh, but you can't meet more tolerant people, to be honest with you.
Mm.
You know, a lot of them have come over here in the 50s and 60s, like my mother-in-law, father-in-law.
Yes, of
and
course.
They've made a good life themselves. The Sikh people have tried to integrate, and they do integrate. They're very tolerant of people. The more tolerant, I'll be honest, my experience with Muslims is very good. I know I play golf with a guy who's Muslim, very nice. But when it comes to their faith, and I'm not religious, I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to believe the rantings of books.
Right.
But when you listen to them, the first thing this guy asked me is, when you got married, did you have to convert? I said, no. He said, oh, I made my wife convert. There's no tolerance there, is there, on their part?
Well, there are with some. I mean, my closest Muslim friend married a Christian woman, and she didn't have to convert. So it's different. It's just different for all people. Robert, best wishes to your wife. Thank you. Wish her good luck in her job. Olu in Hackney. What do you say to this, Olu? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Nick, I don't know if the media has done their proper investigations, because I think the reason this man was actually arrested was because there's a post on Instagram of him pulling out a knife and saying, anybody that wants trouble, I'm ready for you. And I think that's the reason why he was arrested.
When was that filmed and when was that posted?
So if you go on Instagram, there's a page called The Shade Borough, and there is a post on that it's one day ago. And it shows him pulling out, like, a small dagger, saying...
One day, because this is supposed to have taken place on the Saturday. Supposed to have done.
Okay.
So are the police... When he pulls out this... Are we seeing this? Are we trying to see this? When he pulls out this dagger, are police in attendance?
No, he's doing it at home. So I think he's made this video before.
So he's not... I really want to clarify. Is he making an active threat to people? Or is it like a sort of video presentation, as it were?
I think he's making a threat. He's saying that, basically, if you come to my restaurant, I'm going to stab you.
Right.
And I think...
Just to clarify, and I'm not supporting that, but just to clarify, is he making that threat to another person or just to whoever's holding the camera or the phone, whoever's filming him?
No, he's making it to people who...
People who are present.
No, he's making it at home. It's not, like, in front of anyone else. It's at home.
I'm not defending this level of violence, but he's not doing it to people who are present in the restaurant or on the street, just to clarify.
He's not, but no. I think that the media...
No, absolutely. That gives us an indication of the man.
They have a responsibility, because at the end of the day, they're pushing this narrative that, oh, Muslims are this and Muslims are that. and, you know, the police are arresting, like, you know, this whole idea of two-tier.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm really grateful, Olu. Thank you, sir. We're learning a bit more about the man. Again, does that mean he needs to be arrested? Well, Tom, can I give you... Well, there are a lot of police officers called Tom, so I think we'll be all right there. Sounds like the officer was providing the code G pace necessity for arrest and said, because you made threats online, I'd suggest, says Tom... Oh, you're ex-police. I'd suggest, says Tom, social pressure had led to the decision to arrest. Social pressure. Guy in Cleethorpes. Guy, what do you take from this rather confusing story? Good morning.
It is, Nick. Thanks for talking. Interesting, you use the key word for me, choice, and choose.
Yes,
freedom,
absolutely.
To choose.
Yes, yes.
Freedom of speech is... It's become out of control, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom of speech is not about turning up at somebody's place of work or even their livelihood and imposing your views on others with intimidation. That's not a freedom that we should be...
The problem we've got here is that he's not, and I put this word in single quotes, wholly innocent, in that if you look at his social media posts in the past, he puts up some pretty disobliging views about Muslim folk and about his support of non-halal meat. So, do you see what I'm saying? He's kind of added a degree of oppression, not oppression, a degree of tension to the situation.
He's invited. Invited, I mean, I wasn't
that's
aware
the
of
word.
His,
yeah, he's invited.
I wasn't aware of his background, but having said that, from, you know, I've not seen the videos, but they're disturbing the peace. I personally would not go for halal meat, as it's not killed in a humane way. It's less humane. And that is my choice,
yes,
my view, and it's not something I will impose on others. I mean, if you take it to its natural conclusion, then every restaurant in the country that serves meat will be barricaded by vegans in future.
Guy, yes, ultimately it would. Of course, many say, just to put that out there, that halal is the most painless because stunning animals prior to killing them, if you do one swift cut across the throat, is... I'm not saying where I am. I'm just saying that's the argument. The same with kosher as well. Guy, thank you. Have we got time? Yes, we do. So, 8:44, let's get one. We might go a minute late to the news. Selena's in Harrow, and you know this restaurant, is that right? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. I saw all about him, all over Instagram, social media. So I actually am a vegetarian, and I hate the way halal killing... I mean, I hate all animals being killed.
Yeah, I mean...
But halal is particularly cruel.
Stunning isn't great prior to killing either, is it, when you think about it?
I would love the world to be vegan or vegetarian.
Okay.
That's where I stand.
Okay.
I've been watching these videos, and I saw where this gentleman was coming from, so I actually went to the restaurant yesterday to support him.
Oh, right.
It was filled to the brim with British patriots that don't want to have halal imposed on them because it's sold in so many places, even school canteens. People don't want it.
Well,
why is a vocal minority getting to push...
Hold on. I have to say, Selena, when I go to an Indian, I like halal meat. I have no problem with it. So
what's
when you say people don't...
What's the difference in taste between halal and non-halal, Nick?
I think the quality of the meat, it has nothing to do with the taste. I think it's just the quality of the cut, isn't it, really? But I support
people... Is it really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, why do you want an animal to be brutally murdered?
I don't want an animal to be brutal. I want it to be killed in as humane way as it possibly can because I enjoy eating meat. But we're getting a little bit away. What did you see at the restaurant? Apart from everybody, was there aggression outside?
No, there was a security guard outside. On the videos the night before, because I actually was prompted to call in because one of your callers misconstrued the video. So basically, on Friday night, there was a whole group of Islamist yobs that were bullying, harassing and abusing him. So the next morning, he made a post on Instagram. He's a Sikh, and he can carry a kirpan, which is a knife.
Kirpan,
and he said,
one of his five articles of faith. I've done some research on that,
Correct, same here. So basically, it's used for self-defense, and he threatened no one. He said, the police have let me down. If anyone comes to harm me or my family, this is what I have, and it can be used.
Ah,
it can't be used. No,
it can be carried, but it can't be used. There's quite a difference there.
So are people not allowed to defend themselves?
Not with a knife, no. Not with anything.
And what about...
Obviously, I can carry a baseball bat, but I can't start thumping someone on the head with it.
So isn't it an unfair fight if your perpetrators and abusers who are coming to your home, coming to your business, coming to your family... use a knife, and you're not allowed to?
Yes. Hold on. Whoa. Who has used a knife in the group that have come to his restaurant? The halalis?
No.
Well, that... So he's not that that would make it right anyway, even if he had been threatened with a knife. So the knife currently seems only be in one direction. Selina, I'm very grateful you went to the restaurant, and I'm very sorry, but we're incredibly late to the news, so I must move on. Selina, we'll talk again soon. It is 8:47, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK is in constant dialogue with the United States after President Trump's call for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Sir Keir Starmer will set out support for families struggling with the cost of heating oil later, which has soared due to the conflict in the Middle East. And the UK Health Security Agency says it'll provide antibiotics for some students in the Canterbury area after an outbreak of meningitis. LBC weather, mainly dry to start, but rain moving in for much of the country by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archie's on the M11 going out of town. Traffic has been held because of an accident after Junction 6 for the M25. It's heavy on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 for the M26 to Junction 6 for Godstone after an accident earlier. There are queues in Upper Edmonton on the North Circular eastbound. There's one lane closed at the A10 Great Cambridge interchange. That's because a car's broken down. It's slow in Islington. St John Street is closed in both directions between Rosebery Avenue and Spencer Street because of an investigation. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the District Line westbound from Upminster to Earls Court after a passenger was taken ill earlier. There are minor delays on the Victoria line because of cancellations, and there are also minor delays on the Metropolitan line between Harrow-on-the-Hill and Aldgate.
This is LBC.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak, walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast, plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, this is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King. London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Well, we're learning a little bit more, and I have now seen the video of this particular restaurateur in Hammersmith, and he does say that if anybody comes, because he claims he's been failed by the police, he does claim that they haven't been supportive enough, and he does handle his knife and say if anybody comes, he's going to be ready for them. So that is undoubtedly inflaming tensions. We don't know, but we haven't seen any video evidence that he produced the knife to the police officer or any of those who attended that demo at his restaurant. So, again, it would be quite helpful if the Met could actually do what they're paid for, the press team could do what they're paid for, which would tell us exactly what went on in a restaurant on Saturday. So that's not even yesterday or last night. This would be Saturday. We're still waiting for more details. Angelina and Sutton, you're on the radio. Good morning, Angelina. What do you have to say?
Hello. I think one of the points that's being missed is that the man doesn't want to serve halal food, and that could be due to his own religious and faith belief.
Yes.
The halal food that is slaughtered is blessed in the name of Allah.
Yes.
And, you know, he may not want to eat food that is served to another god. I don't agree with his belief, you know, and backgrounds against Muslims, of course not. But we have to take into account people do not want to eat food that has been, you know, sacrificed to another god, not of their faith.
I agree. We also have to take into account that he has inflamed tensions by posting this video, which, I've, thanks to Olu, I've now had an opportunity to watch during the commercial break.
Of course, no, I agree with that. I don't think he should have inflamed tensions. You know, his views against Muslims are not something that I hold on to. But I think in terms of spaces enforcing the eating of halal food, we have to remember there is other spaces that do not want to eat food sacrificed to another god. And I think that's perfectly acceptable.
What we have here, more broadly, if we come to the policing aspect, if we go from the... What we have here is the impact of online now into the world of policing, because the police have to be aware of what this man has said in his post, and I think, in a sense, that has coloured their actions on Saturday. I would think, again, it would be quite nice if they could help us, but that, I sense, is what's going on here.
No, in agreement, completely.
Angelina, have a safe day. More on this in a moment. 8.53 to other matters, very disturbing matters. A meningitis outbreak has killed two young people and left 11 others seriously ill. The victims yet to be named are thought to be aged between 17 and 21. One has been confirmed as a student at the University of Kent in Canterbury. The other is said to be a sixth former at Queen Elizabeth's Grammar School in Faversham, which is very close to Canterbury, both in Kent. Most of those hospitalised are of the same age and are also believed to be students at the university and or possibly the grammar school. Experts describe the number and severity cases as very rare and extremely concerning. Let's turn to Dr. Tom Nutt, who is CEO of Meningitis Now and joins me. Thank you, Doctor. First off, let's start at the very beginning, as it were. What is meningitis, if you can explain to listeners who are not familiar with it? Good morning.
Yep, good morning, Nick. So meningitis is the inflammation of the meninges, which is the brain and the spinal cord's protective membranes. It's an infection, and it's caused by bacteria. And when it strikes, as you've heard this morning, it can be absolutely devastating. It can kill within 24 hours.
How does one know one might have it? What are the symptoms you look out for, Doctor?
Well, part of the problem is that the early signs and symptoms are very easily confused with something like flu or a hangover, because you're really looking for, you know, a high temperature, a headache, vomiting, that sort of stuff. But of course, as the disease progresses, what you then find is that you then may get the more kind of classic signs and symptoms. So that could be a stiff neck, an aversion to bright lights, and in some, but I would stress very much not all cases, a rash that doesn't disappear when, for example, you might apply a glass.
You roll a tumbler. I remember doing that with my children when they were little. You roll a tumbler over the area, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. But I would stress that these signs and symptoms, you may not expect all of them to appear, and they won't appear in any particular order. So you're always looking out for someone who's unwell and deteriorating. That's the key thing to look out for when you should seek urgent medical help.
So, Doctor, what we do know, tragically, is one of the victims was in a university, the other's in a what believed to be a grammar school. How contagious is it?
Well, I think, as you've already said yourself, Nick, thankfully it is a relatively rare disease, so we do need to keep that into perspective. This does seem to be a particularly bad outbreak. I can't think of one in recent years that has been this bad. So really, it is a question of people making sure that they're up to date with their vaccines, making sure that they're aware of the signs and symptoms, and making sure that they are ready to seek urgent medical help should they be afraid that meningitis has struck.
Is there any particular group that are more susceptible, the young, teenagers, whatever it might be, or can it just strike at random?
Well, anyone of any age can get meningitis, so it is something we do all need to be aware of. But it is babies who are most at risk, followed by teenagers and young adults. And as we've seen from this terrible case in Kent, that is partly because youngsters, you know, they get together in the context of a university campus or a party or a nightclub. And of course, they're more likely to be spreading the bacteria that causes the disease. Bacteria that normally rests harmlessly in the back of our nose and throats. But of course, the more youngsters you get congregating, mixing like you do when you're at university or in the sick form, that's when the risk elevates.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Dr. Tom Nutt, you are CEO of Meningitis Now, that, of course, event taking place in Kent. The UK Health, what is it, UK HSA, UK Health Agency, attending, asking all students who think that they've been in contact to attend a special meeting at the campus today as they try and contain it. The 11 others who have been infected are responding well to treatment. All right, let's pick up on what you're saying about that restaurant in West London. Andrew in Dulwich, this restaurant has been targeted since he put up a sign saying no halal meat, but the Met Police did nothing due to two-tier and the community policing. Meanwhile, this comes Cam from Hillingdon. He's not a practicing Sikh. He cannot carry a kirpan. He's like a Tommy Robinson person. He's doing everything against the Sikhs and Muslims to show he's a patriot. All the Sikh community do not agree with his behaviour. He is an instigator for content for his socials. He's constantly bullying people with very aggressive and insane comments to get a reaction. I mean, because of this level of claim and counterclaim, it might help if the Met actually said what went on. On Saturday, Emily's in Manchester. Emily, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'd just like to say I really enjoy listening to
you. Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you for calling me.
Yeah, so it's just a quick thing, really. I don't think I hold an opinion, but maybe it's a question. But
okay.
You know where the gentleman had on his door that I proudly do not serve halal meat?
Yeah,
well, I want to know, is that... I'm sorry to ask you this question, because this is something that I'm now thinking about. Is that democratic speech? Because I don't think it's hate speech. Is that just democracy, so you should be allowed to do that? Or is that a bit provocative? Well, the only thing I was thinking of, is it in my head as I was sort of critically thinking about this, is it a bit provocative, like back in an apartheid day when people used to say, we proudly don't let people of colour in? Oh, yeah. Is it akin to that, or is that, or is it not?
Well, you raise a really, I mean, that's a facet, to me, at face value, if you want to say you proudly serve kosher meat, you proudly don't serve halal meat, you're proudly vegetarian, I don't have any problem with that word. But yeah, I see why you're saying it.
I just didn't know if it's provocative. I don't hold an opinion.
Is that
what provoked people? And is that provocative? I mean, should they have been provoked?
Listen, Emily, you're spot on. Yes, it is provocative. Yes, his videos are provocative. Did he need to be arrested on Saturday? We all still don't know because the Met won't tell us. Emily, such a good point you make, the idea of the word proud. Yeah, that is going to be seen as inflammatory, but if a Jewish restaurant wanted to say we're proudly kosher, surely we should allow that in Britain? It means we must move on, and we'll come back to the story that I'm afraid was completely hijacked by this conversation over this restaurant, which is the level of support we should or should not offer to the US in the Strait of Hormuz. Speaking with me in the previous hour of the show, former head of the Royal Navy, Alan Lord West, said...
The Straits are so important to the globe that I think we should be willing to be involved, and I hope that we're in discussion, I'm sure we are, with the American Navy at the moment. They'll be looking at the sort of force they need.
Plus, calling all landlords, are you part of this supposed stampede to evict tenants before some new ban comes in? And calling all tenants, are you a victim of that? Doesn't seem to work for either, does it? News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Cabinet Minister has told LBC the UK is in constant dialogue with President Trump after he called for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has effectively closed the strait, which is a key route for global oil supplies. Mr. Trump has warned that NATO faces a very bad future if members fail to help with his request. Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden's told Nick this morning the UK stance on the conflict in the Middle East remains the same.
We have not sought to be protagonists in this war, and the Prime Minister has been clear about that since this all began a few weeks ago.
Can you envisage a time where Royal Navy ships would be sent to the Strait of Hormuz to ensure safe passage of oil?
Well, I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down.
Sir Keir Starmer is set to announce support for households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the Iran conflict. Plans to help people who use oil to heat their homes will be revealed as they're not covered by the energy price cap. The UK Health Security Agency is to provide some students in Kent with antibiotics after an outbreak of meningitis. Two people have died in the Canterbury area. 11 others are understood to be seriously ill in hospital. Employers are to be paid £3,000 for every young person they hire who've been looking for a job for more than 6 months. Ministers want to bring down the rising number of people aged
aged between 18 and 24 who are not in work, training or education. And one battle after another took home six Oscars at the Academy Awards overnight. The political thriller picked up Best Film and Best Director. Michael B. Jordan won the Best Actor Prize for portraying twin brothers in the period vampire film Sinners, while Jessie Buckley was named Best Actress for her portrayal of William Shakespeare's wife in Hamlet.
My little girl, who is 8 months, who has absolutely no idea what's going on and is probably dreaming of milk, but this is kind of a big deal. And I love you and I love being your mom and I can't wait to discover life beside you.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 26 at 10,286. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather mainly dry to start, but rain will return for large parts of the country by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's News room for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after nine on Monday, March the 16th. Coming up in this hour, we'll go back to that conversation about the level of support that should or should not be provided by the United Kingdom. As President Trump says, we're always there for NATO. Where are they now for us in the Strait of Hormuz? Can it be seen as a defence? Continuing the defensive posture, i.e. we're not going to allow our citizens or military bases to come under attack, or will it be an offensive gesture if we were to go on patrol? Yes, that's what we have to decide. In other news, are you one of the landlords racing to evict tenants before legislation comes in? Reportedly, are you one of the tenants now who fears you'll be evicted? And of course, if the landlords sell all these properties, or perhaps even board them up, surely that's going to make supply even shorter. And by the rule of law of economics, even, that means the prices will go up. And having talked about a row at an Indian restaurant, we now go to a bakery. And a newspaper, The Guardian, accused of anti-Semitic tropes after it described the opening of a Gales bakery as an act of heavy-handed aggression against a neighbouring Palestinian cafe. Yes, that's taking place as well on the streets of London. We'll give you more details later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you were listening just about an hour ago, you knew we got into the conversation concerning Sir Keir Starmer currently refusing to send warships, brackets, I don't know how many we've got, close brackets, to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz after Donald Trump called for reinforcements to stave off a mounting economic crisis. And I remind you, gas, as they call it, has now gone to getting close to $5 a gallon in the United States. Those midterms are not far away. That is the highest price for, I think from memory, somewhere in the region of about 5-6 years. And just like pretty much every nation on the planet, people vote with their wallets and their purses. And they're not going to be happy paying $5 a gallon. Really not happy. So he's in a world of pain now. From the very start, the only reason that I saw for British military involvement was for the protection of military personnel and, of course, British citizens in the air, roughly around 300,000. That's why I would have thought that when the Americans first asked to use the air bases, we should have said yes. To help defend our people, our citizens. Yes, of course. Subsequently, Sir Keir Starmer came way around to that way of thinking. Now he's got another problem, in that Donald Trump is expecting, we won't play you the audio or the clip from the airplane where Donald Trump, because as ever, he's effectively shouting over a tannoy system. But he essentially says, we're always there for NATO. We're a NATO when we want us. So should we now? Is this seen, if we now send warships, whatever we have in all honesty, to try and keep the Strait of Hormuz open or reopen, however you want to put it, can that be seen as still defensive, or is that offensive? Well, in the first hour of the show, I spoke with Senior Cabinet Minister on the Round, Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden. He was on talking about a job initiatives for young people, which we wish nothing but success. But I did ask him, what UK support will there be for the US with this request?
Well, the Prime Minister has been clear that we're not protagonists of this war. He talked to President Trump about this last night. Of course, we all want energy prices to come down. The best way for that to happen is for this war to conclude as soon as possible. So we'll keep up a constant dialogue with the United States and with other allies on this. But we have not sought to be protagonists in this war, and the Prime Minister has been clear about that since this all began a few weeks ago.
Can you envisage a time where Royal Navy ships would be sent to the Strait of Hormuz to ensure safe passage of oil?
Well, I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down. And our decisions will always be informed by what's in Britain's national interest. That starts with not being a protagonist in this war. But of course, we'll do what we can to protect our citizens and our military assets in the region too.
Now, I also spoke with the former head of the Royal Navy, Alan, now Lord West, who told me the Prime Minister should listen to the plea from President Trump and back the US military in order to protect the Strait of Hormuz.
As far as I'm concerned, we are now at war with Iran because of what's going on in the region. And there is no doubt that actually the hold they've got over the area is the fact they can close the Straits of Hormuz. Why the Americans didn't realise this was going to happen, I find absolutely extraordinary. The reason we had had forces out there for years was because of the possibility of the Straits being closed at any stage. But quick as a flash, when things started happening, we withdrew our forces from that area. Goodness knows why. There's a lack of geostrategic thought with maritime power. When you send your ships towards the sound of the guns, and we didn't. We took every single one of them away. And that's extraordinary. But the Straits are so important to the globe that I think we should be willing to be involved. And I hope that we're in discussion, I'm sure we are, with the American Navy at the moment. They'll be looking at the sort of force they need to keep it open, and it's going to be big, and it'll need a lot of escorts and things, but we've got very few escorts. What we have got is great expertise in mine hunting, and we have developed remote ways of doing this, so we don't put the mine hunters into the fields. I'm not sure how far that's got, how good we are, but we certainly should offer to do that to help them, because keeping the straits open is crucial for the global economy.
To the subject of what is defensive and what is offensive, or defence and offence, as they say in the US, I was also joined by the Director General of RUSI, Royal United Services Institute, Karen von Hippel. Now, she backed the approach taken by our Prime Minister and America's Western allies, who've taken a more defensive approach in the face of an increasingly unpredictable and jumpy US president.
I think it's very difficult for every country that Trump has requested assistance from, including China, by the way, because, of course, one day he says, we don't need you, you're too late. And then the next day, we do need you. It's in every country's interest to do as much as they can to help. But many of them will be reluctant to get too much involved in this war, so they will not get attacked even more than they already are getting attacked by the Iranians. So I think if they can maintain their defensive posture, which the Brits have done and a few other countries have done, that'll be important. But, it's a challenge. I mean, Trump is telling everybody they've won, and then he's saying, well, we need your help. And it's kind of confusing.
And it got you talking. Here's some of the calls, starting with Stuart in Manchester.
Yes, I believe we should send our Navy there to support. We can still maintain our defensive stance. But at the end of the day, we're defending our resources, and not only our resources, it's Europe's resource as well. We don't have to be there on the offensive. We don't have to be attacking, but we should make sure the oil's getting through and support our ally as well.
David in South Woodford.
There is no military solution. This is America and Netanyahu's mess. They need to stop this war and let the rest of the world live.
Jason Marilyn.
If we send the ships in, we're definitely getting more involved with this war. But I don't see what choice we've got. These ships have to be coming through. We can't let them stop. But my concern is that the UK, we couldn't even stop protesters on the M25. So maybe we should ask the Americans for help there.
Quite a clever line there, has to be said. All right, let's see what you're saying now. Ned's in Cambridge. Ned, your reaction. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Yeah, not bad.
So I've got a little something to share, actually, that might sort of add a bit of spice to the pot. I've been looking at, listening to people from the CIA and ex-UK Navy commanders about the Strait of Hormuz. Now, the thing is that the IRGC don't defend this with big naval ships, which Trump has said that he sunk anyway. They have thousands of skiffs small boats, ribs, jet skis, this Navy commander was saying, with explosives on them, and you have an enormous mountain range behind it. So if you were to put a really big ship in a tiny strait like that, it's basically swarm warfare is how they'll defend it. So they won't send out the big guns, Navy, for it. They'll send out 100 of these little things, explosives on the front. So the more ships you put
in
there...
Sorry, I'm confused. Are they manned, then, these small
vessels? They can be, yeah. Right. I mean, there can be like two or three people on them. But, these people are up for martyrdom, mate. And they've been planning for this for years and decades and decades and decades.
So these are the equivalent of kamikaze pilots, then, in a sense?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Good luck.
And if you're firing over the mountain range, that'll keep the ships busy, you know, from the missiles and the drones coming in from the air. And then you've got 200 jet skis and ribs coming towards you.
Right.
With a guy on the front with a... with an explosive thing on the nose, you've just lost all your Navy. And I mean, the thing is, the Americans know this, you know, as does everybody else, because we've been gaming, wargaming this scenario for decades, as of the IRGC.
How do you know that?
Just from the CIA stuff that I saw. I mean, it's widely available on the internet. You can see that. There's a UK commander that was on the BBC News and said, look, you know, the mines laying stuff doesn't look like that. They've got these things in people's sheds. You know,
sorry, when you say these things, you mean what do you mean by these things?
The small boats, you know, the small ribs.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you just put them on a trailer and take them down and launch them. I see what you mean.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah. You know, so there's no big sort of like World War II naval battle.
No, I see what you're
saying.
You
know, it's basically done by swarm warfare. Lots of small explosions.
So, okay, well, that's really interesting background. Now I have to ask you, given that you know that level of knowledge, what should Sir Keir Starmer do with the request to send Royal Naval assets?
Well, I think probably the mine clearing drones are good news, because if you put a ship there, the question will be how many sailors do you want to lose?
Mm.
You know, because the Americans know this, Nick, and this is why they're asking for help. You know, because otherwise it's all their stuff now. They'd rather put a few of our stuff in between it. We haven't got a lot to spare. And also, I mean, this is coming from a man, don't you know, forget, or that's been constantly flirting about taking them out of NATO. And, you know, it's just more bully boy tactics from Trump, I'm afraid.
Ned, grateful for all the background. Thank you. Finishing with you to get more people involved. Graham's in the Hay. Hello, Graham. What are you saying in the Netherlands? Good morning.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
Good,
I was just wondering if you're aware of the fact that the Straits of Hormuz are actually not closed. It's a selective withdrawal of service. India has sent ships through after direct negotiation with Iran.
Yes, that's right. We said
China
this in the previous hour. Yes.
Turkey and France is now discussing with Tehran. There are actually no mines in the Straits. That's fairly obvious because these ships have gone through, and mines don't stop being dangerous because the ships broadcasting China ownership.
What should so the basically position Trump of the
is,
UK be
is, Trump is panicking.
Yeah.
the position of the UK should be to negotiate.
Sorry, let me just finish the question so others can get involved. I know you've got it. So the question we're asking, Graham, should the UK now be in a position to negotiate with Tehran so that we can ensure we get some oil through, or to join Trump and his naval flotilla? Graham?
I think you're going to see more and more countries making their own deals with Tehran. This is isolating the US. It's showing the truth that Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth are full of lies, and it's just not going to work.
How big a story is this domestically in the Netherlands? Do you live in the Netherlands, or are you just there on business or whatever?
No, I live here.
Is this front page news in the Netherlands?
It's not that it's front page news. It's just that it's not being hidden as it is by, you know, most of the Anglo-Saxon press. It's known here. It's being discussed. Italy's also starting conversations with.
Sorry, when you say it's being discussed, the fact that they're negotiating. So is the Netherlands discussing with Tehran together?
They haven't said so. They haven't said so yet. I don't think it's part of their sort of initial. That it's not what they need to do right now. But the point I'm trying to make is that the story being pushed by Trump and Hegseth is hollow. It's full of lies. There are no mines. Showing us a concrete building being blown up does not equate to destroying military installations.
Grateful for your input. Thank you. That's an even better question, Graham. Very grateful for your background on that. Do we talk with Tehran and ensure that we get oil through, or send assets to join Trump's flotilla? That's an even trickier one. We'll pick up on your views on that. Also, domestically, are you one of the landlords in a supposed race to remove tenants before that no-fault evictions ban? Are you a tenant or potentially on the receiving end of that? Does it work for anyone? It's 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK is in constant dialogue with the United States after President Trump's call for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Sir Keir Starmer will set out support for families struggling with the cost of heating oil later, which has soared due to the conflict in the Middle East. And the UK Health Security Agency says it'll provide antibiotics for some students in the Canterbury area after an outbreak of meningitis. LBC weather, mainly dry to start, but rain moving in for much of the country by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the M25 anti-clockwise after an investigation earlier, but in Junction 24 for Potter's Bar and Junction 23 for the A1M. It is slow on the M11 going out of town because of an accident that's now on the hard shoulder after Junction 6 for the M25. There are delays in Upper Edmonton on the North Circular eastbound. There's one lane closed at the A10 Great Cambridge interchange because a car has broken down. On the Tube, there's no service on the Metropolitan line between Wembley Park and Aldgate southbound because of a fire alert at Willesden Green. There are severe delays on the District line between Earls Court and Richmond after an investigation earlier. And on the trains, East Midlands Railway have delays of up to 45 minutes and some cancellations between St Pancras and Leicester. That's after an investigation earlier.
LBC. Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £181 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over. Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK. So we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Steve, Mark and loads of others, you're going to have just have your say. You're going to have your say. What is offensive? What is defensive strategy? Of course, the other question is, should we, and I'm very grateful, be made aware that so many countries now are dealing to, or trying to deal directly with Tehran to ensure their oil supply. Quite a choice facing Sir Keir Starmer. We'll come to your views on that in just a minute. Now, according to one newspaper today, the I newspaper, there is a race by landlords to remove tenants before no-fault evictions ban. This is coming to birth, by the way, due in May. Tenants across the country have said they've been, and I quote one here, chucked out like an old sofa after receiving an eviction letter, also known as a Section 21, in recent weeks. Evictions being ordered by both owners of individual homes and corporate landlords of large blocks of flats who are in a last-minute panic about the new Renters' Rights Act. Let's turn to Anne Ashworth, property and finance writer and commentator. Well, we need to start, as they say, at the very beginning, Anne. What is this legislation coming in? What is the heart of it? What is causing such concern? What changes? Good morning.
The rental market is about to undergo seismic change, Nick. On May the 1st, the Renters' Rights Act comes in. Now, this legislation is being applied in various stages, but the biggest thing that's happening from May the 1st is that Section 21 evictions are going to be abolished. And that means that you will find it, if you're a landlord, much harder to get a tenant out. You need to either have be selling the property or be experiencing severe rental arrears. The balance of power is shifting from landlord to tenant, and a lot of landlords have somehow just woken up to this fact and are acting now while they can.
Was the balance of power shifted too much the other way prior to this, Anne?
Well, some would argue, yes, that you could get rid of a tenant. There were revenge evictions. Anybody who's a tenant will maybe have suffered one of these when they've asked for repairs and the response is, actually, I want you out of your flat. But at the same time, landlords have suffered an absolute slew of tax and legislative changes, and so there are fewer of them. So we've got an almighty mess just about to arise. There's far fewer rental properties. People are disinclined to become a landlord, to start buy-to-let. And meanwhile, an awful 5 million households in this country rely on the private rented sector.
How easy or otherwise was it to prove a Section 21, Anne?
Well, it depended on, you know, if you were an adept landlord, and some are, we know there are rogues in the sector, they found it quite easy, you know, despite the legal problems. And a lot of people, when threatened with eviction, are just so scared that they quit. But I wonder if you've spoken to any of your Gen Z colleagues in the last few weeks and found out how many of them have suddenly heard from their landlord, more in sorrow than in anger, that he or she is selling up and they've got to find a new place at a time when the supply of rental homes is about 40% down on a decade ago.
Lastly, I come from a time where when I met my wife, or you meet your husband, or you meet your partner, what you would often do is that you would keep one flat or house and you would leave the other one and you would rent it out. It was a nice source of income. It almost served as a pension. And I sense from your background on all of this that that's almost unheard of these days.
It's now very, very difficult. And I suspect there will be many of the people...
But you know the thing... I mean, I don't know whether you're my kind of age, but you know what we used to do in our day. It was the perfect... It worked for everybody.
And you had a rental flat and you provided a service.
Yeah.
For somebody, you gave them a home. Now it's the sums don't add up,
right.
And those great people are leaving the market. One wonders who we'll be left with.
Really grateful for all your background. Thanks so much. Comprehensive background from Anne Ashworth, property and finance writer and commentator. Calls already coming in on this. Who would be a landlord? My goodness me. Mind you, I have absolute sympathy, of course, if you suddenly sent... What is that expression from the eye? Here we go. Da-da-da-da. I was chucked out like an old sofa. Dear God. Laura in Croydon. How does this affect you, Laura? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Well, we're a very large landlord. We've got around 2,000 properties
we
own and we manage.
Right.
To be honest, we've been preparing for this the last 2 years, so we haven't really...
When you say 2 years, was this started by the Conservatives then, just to clarify?
Yes. Okay. We're in social housing, so it's our business to know, you know, what's coming up in legislation. What we found is that in the last month, because we also sublet from other landlords as well, that we've been offered lots of properties for these smaller landlords who are going to run away and, you know, don't want to have anything to do with tenants anymore. They're either selling up or looking for company-let agreements, which they're out of the Housing Act.
You say you were prepping for 2 years.
Yeah.
What did that prep consist of?
So we work with somebody from the Lettings Guild of letting agents, and they've got their ear to the ground on all legislation that's coming up and what's going through. And so all our staff and all our team have been trained in understanding what's going to be happening, because there's a lot of paperwork involved as well.
Was this change in law required? Was this change in law, was the Renters' Rights Act needed, Laura?
Yes and no. So if there are some landlords out there that do need to be regulated, but I think some of the things, like the Section 21, hasn't been thought out properly, because they don't actually know what's going to be replacing it, although Section 8s are going to be replacing it. But
Slow down. What's a Section 8? Bear in mind, I have a lot of listeners who don't know. What does a Section 8 allow for?
So Section 8 has mandatory grounds. So Section 21 was no fault. So if I wanted to get rid of somebody from one of my properties, I serve them Section 21. There's no reason why I served it. I just want my property back. On a Section 8, it's a lot more difficult. It's usually for rent arrears, antisocial behaviour, that kind of thing. But for the last, I'd say 4 or 5 years, there's been a massive backlog with Section 21s. So we can only presume that Section 8 is going to be worse, and also they don't actually know how it's going to work when you go to court.
But I've taken calls when I've discussed this in the past, Laura, of people, and this is not companies like you, this is somebody who might have one or two properties, and they've been owed money for over 12 months and they can't get the tenant out.
Yeah, exactly. That happens to us too. We do have tenants that don't pay us. It takes 2 years sometimes to go to court. But with the Section 8, it's supposed to be, well, it used to be 8 weeks, it's going to be 12 weeks now, and then you're supposed to be able to get people out if they are in rent arrears. But it's quite a lot of people have got scared off about this now, and they're just cutting ties and saying, look, I'm not going to deal with this and not be able to pay my mortgage.
Lastly, the market you're in, the world you're in, what's the impact going to be on the market? On the rental, fewer properties, right?
Fewer properties. It's more, unfortunately, it's better for companies like us because we do company lets. It's going to be the individual landlords are just going to run away, and then they're going to go for. I think they're going to try and find a way of getting around not having a Section 21. The savvy landlords know what to do.
Laura, thanks for all the background. Good luck with it. I can understand why people you do a company let. My goodness, if I had a house. Which to let? Of course, I've got a house. If I had a house to let, I should have said. If I had a house to let, I'd just go to a company let. Just give me a firm paying the cheque, not an individual. Mohammed's in South Shields. Mohammed, good morning. Hello, sir. How are you? Good to have you on.
Well, I was all right last week. Friday I got my eviction notice after 6 years with a landlord. I took it to the council. If he gives a minute of your time, I'll explain the situation quickly. Took the Section 21 notice to the council, thinking the council can rehouse this. She went, oh, just stay in your property, Mohammed, and get them to take it to court. When they take it to court, then don't move out. Get the landlord to escalate it to the High Court. Get the High Court sheriffs to come out and throw you out. And then, when they throw you out, come back to the council and we'll give you a hostel.
No.
Nick.
Is that what the council said to you?
That's what the council said. When the landlord takes you to court,
I believe
don't move out.
That's outrageous.
Nick, honestly, I swear on the Quran, they turned around and said, when they take you to court, don't move out, get them to escalate it to the High Court. That'll cost them thousands of pounds. It'll cost them about £500 for the bailiff to come to the door. And when they do, come to the door, we'll give you a hostel. But I've been looking in Newcastle, Nick, for some back in Newcastle where I live. Yeah. And there's some properties there, so hopefully I can get something in the next couple of weeks.
I can't remember. You're a family man. I can't remember, Mohammed. Have you got children? Have you got a family?
No, sir, I'm just single.
You're
single, Nick.
So that's not quite so. But that is outrageous. Mohammed, we'll be talking soon because you're one of my fuel trackers. Good luck with that. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear. A lot of people in this situation. Is that Boz in South?
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Yes, this
hello,
is Boz.
Boz.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Hi, morning. I'm a very small landlord, and I took early retirement with the hope that my property would pay me kind of a small pension sooner than my retirement age. And then I had this lady with a small with a baby, and she took on my one bedroom flat in 2020.
Is it just one property you rent out, Boz?
I had others as well, but that was, I'm totally telling you that what's the problem, in this one. Because we have renters' rights, but there is no landlord's right. Because what I've suffered is, I had a tenant on a 2-year contract. I got her through the council, and the council was very happy for me to take on board. And 2 years later, after her contract ended, I thought she would leave. And then she said, oh, no, I'm not going to leave because our council couldn't provide me accommodation. This is Southwark Council, yeah? Mm-hmm. And then I contacted the Southwark Council, who actually initially I contacted them to get for this tenant's contract. And they said, oh, you have to take her to court. Okay, fine. I took her to court. And my case was dismissed. And then I didn't mind.
So why was your case? Sorry, your case was dismissed. So the court didn't find for you. Is that right?
No. What happened was when I'm a London accredited landlord as well, although I've got very few properties because I wanted to learn everything. I wanted to do everything right because I have worked in a disciplined service. I'm an ex-soldier, ex-Gurkha before, so I don't want to be on the wrong side of the law.
Yes.
And then council asked me so many documents. It was during COVID. Gave them everything they wanted. But
I've got to get to, actually, I'm late already. So did you get the tenant out in the end or not?
Well, she left. She left when after 8 months rent, 6 months or 8 months rent unpaid, and she destroyed the flat and she disappeared. costing me like £25,000 in total in lost rent, as well as the property damage.
So and are you staying in the business, or are you going to get out of the rental business?
Well, I've already taken early retirement. I have to stay on the business. If I want to sell it now, the property price has gone down, so right. I'm already in negative equity. So there's no point selling it down.
I see. Boz, you gave us your story very well. Thank you. In a related... Thanks, Boz. Lee says, your caller, Mohammed, has just told you regarding the council telling him to stay put. I'm a landlord who's just gone through this. I'm finally getting my property back after 20 months of eviction notices. It was a Section 21 court notices, and now the bailiffs. This is crazy. We'll continue with that. Also, some people see this is crazy. The Guardian newspaper accused of using anti-Semitic tropes after it described the opening of this bakery chain...
So why does Gales exist? Well, for us, it's got to be to feed people better. See, Gales has always been a way of thinking, creating, and serving.
Gales Bakery, which is very much upmarket bakery, founded by an Israeli baker, Gail Mejia, in the 1990s. It, Gales Bakery, have moved in a branch close to a Palestinian cafe. The Guardian newspaper have almost likened it to the conflict. Is that an editorial line too far? It's 9:32. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the UK is in constant dialogue with President Trump after he called for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Pat McFadden says decisions will always be informed by Britain's national interests, which start with not being a protagonist in the Iran war. Keir Starmer is due to set out support for families struggling with the cost of heating oil, which has soared due to the conflict in the Middle East. More than 1.5 million households rely on fuel, which isn't covered by the energy price cap. And the UK Health Security Agency says it'll provide antibiotics for some students in the Canterbury area after an outbreak of meningitis. Two people have died, including a student at the University of Kent. LBC weather mainly dry to start, but rain will move in to much of the country by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
If you owned a diesel Nissan, Renault, Jaguar or Land Rover built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Don't miss out. You could be among the millions of drivers across the UK bringing diesel emissions claims. Check now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Eligibility criteria apply and any compensation may vary.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, we might come back to your views on this renters' rights in a moment, but we do. We've got two issues now live as regards the UK involvement in Iran. One, how far do we go with Donald Trump's request to NATO? Two, do we talk to Tehran, as it's reported France is doing, the Netherlands is doing, and Italy apparently, to ensure that they get their oil? Let's go to... Mark has been holding on forever. Mark in Woking. Sorry, man, you've been on for quite a while. You're on the radio. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Trump likes to do a deal, so maybe we should do one.
Supposedly, yes.
Yes, I read the book. so maybe we should do a deal with him. This is it.
Go on.
If he stops tariffs on British goods, we'll send a ship. If he stops messing around with Greenland, we'll send a second ship. And if he doesn't mention taking over Canada, we'll send a third ship.
Right. That would then possibly put us offside with Tehran. How much would that bother you?
I'm sort of opposed to the war. And
I'm totally opposed to a war, but I'm for defence, and that might be defence of our shipping rights, of course.
Yes, yes. I'm not over sure which way I'd lean on that one, but...
Can you trust him?
No, I don't think we can.
So the last question is, and by the way, I agree with that, his trust... Let me rephrase that. Do you think you can guarantee his word? Therefore, do you ever think you can do a deal with someone whose word you can't necessarily guarantee?
You've got me on that. The answer's no.
All right, Mark, look after yourself. Sorry to keep you on the line so long. Have a good day. Steve's in Chelmsford. To deal or not to deal with Tehran? To support or not to support the US, US Navy? What does the Royal Navy do?
Right, you support the US. You support them. At the end of the day, Starmer needs to step up and stop being a wet weekend. He's already been given a bit of a broadside by Trump in his Truth Social post that he put out a couple of weeks ago when he wasn't happy about the Fairford and Diego Garcia islands.
Yeah, base.
So he was given a broadside then and a warning that we will remember. And now he said it again. And the implication is that the bigger war is the war in Ukraine. That's the one that we need to worry about.
Well, and I think, respectfully, with oil prices, we need to have some concern of the Strait of Hormuz, of course, as well, Steve. No?
Well, no, indeed. And this is what I'm saying. We should get involved. And at the end of the day, the Iranian military has virtually been decimated anyway. So when it comes to a war of boots on the ground, the big one is going to be Russia. And if we don't help the Americans, then Trump will start to withdraw from NATO, and then that will embolden Russia. And once Russia take the Donbass, then we will get involved. And it'll be our sons and family members that will be going to war. So all these Mickey Mouse people that are phoning up, like making jokes about, oh, do this and we'll send one ship. Well, it's the chickens are going to come home to roost within the next couple of years if we're not careful, and our sons and daughters and family members will be going to war.
Sam, thank you. I'm so sorry, Steve, thank you. Sam, come to you in just a moment. Let me do some of the many socials. Sam, come to you in a moment. Thanks, Steve. Andrew in Derbyshire, you've done a complete reverse ferret. 2 weeks ago, you were all for getting involved. No, I wasn't. If you listen carefully, I was for using the airbases in defence of British military personnel and British citizens. Yes, always, always. I have never advocated the idea of actually going into Tehran. Phil Matthews, I worked for NBC News back in the 80s during the Iran-Iraq war, covering the US Navy, defending US and other shipping through the Strait. Ask the US Navy what happened to the USS Samuel B. Roberts when they tried to defend convoys. It didn't end well. I recorded actuality of Iranian hits on shipping during that time for the NBC Today programme. Good to know you're listening. Thank you. Andy asks, why bail out Trump and Netanyahu, who've got themselves and the world into this mess, to build a greater Israel? Trump has undermined NATO with the threats to Canada and Greenland. He's insulted our war dead and sided with Russia, as well as putting tariffs on us. Taff in London. Option one, negotiating with Tehran, will never happen. Option two can happen most likely because NATO and anyone else will follow and has to follow Trump's lead. Negotiating gas and oil with Iran is betrayal to Trump and would break the relationship for good. Sam in Hammersmith. Sam, what is the course of action as you see it? Good morning.
Morning. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Morning. No, we definitely need to support Trump and the US and Israel in this war and protect the Strait of Hormuz. I think definitely is in everybody's interest.
When you say that, we are learning that other countries have decided they're going to negotiate, apparently France and Italy.
In whatever shape or form we protect it, that's down to the British
government. Which would you go for? Do you talk with Tehran or side with Trump?
I would side with our allies.
Like Trump. Okay.
Definitely. And the other point I'd like to make is future protection and guarantees. I don't understand why we are putting ourselves in this situation year after year, month after month. Why can't we build the equivalent of a Suez Canal, avoiding the Strait of Hormuz and cutting through UAE, so we don't have to go around that sharp corner and putting our merchandise in danger?
Well, there's the cost, there's the time, and the likelihood of the UAE giving up vast amounts of land. That would take years.
Not really, because if you look at the tip of UAE, and if you look, there's a cluster of islands, so the Suez Canal is already there. Instead of bombing each other, why don't they bomb a couple of those islands, make a pathway, make a Suez Canal, so we're not putting ourselves in danger if Tehran decides to wake up on the wrong side of the bed.
Right. You've built a lot of canals, have you, Sam?
I haven't. No.
I mean, I must admit, I didn't know. Do you, it took more than 10 years to build the Suez Canal, and that's once they started work on it.
Let's do it. Why don't we do it? Because
the UAE probably doesn't want to be bombed, Sam.
Well, it's they're being bombed now. What's the difference?
Let's file it as an idea and see what others make of it. Sam, thank you for hanging on the line. An interesting one, if nothing else. Don't think it's going to work, but who knows? Amin is in Kingston. Amin, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Firstly, I think it's very obvious that Trump now praying that his allies sending his troops, and God forbid they get killed, and then he can, escalate this war and, hide all of his mistakes or hide all of his, idiot ideas. One of your guests in the first hour, he said it was funny that Trump didn't think about the consequences of, state of hormones.
Oh, and yes.
Yeah, and then he says that we have to help him. We have to help someone who didn't think about these very obvious things that even the ordinary people knew about.
Don't you think he thought it would be another Venezuela? He thought it would be over and done with.
Exactly. Yeah. All the point is, he saw after the Venezuela, he thought that he can do whatever he wants and without any consequences. Now he is in a deep, you can call it anything you want. Then now he just hanging and try to involve the others.
And lastly, when you say involve the others, what should Sir Keir Starmer's position be for the United Kingdom?
I think the first duty of our prime minister is protect our life. Yeah, our life. Not sending our people straight to the death.
All right. Great. Thank you, Amin. Grateful. Protection of citizens, not sending people into military conflict, which could lead to their deaths. We will return to that subject, but understandably, if you are a landlord or if you're a tenant, this story's got you exercised. With one paper, the Eye suggesting, or reporting, I'm sorry, that landlords are rushing to remove tenants before Labour's ban on no-fault evictions. But on the tenant side, they're being, quotes, chucked out like an old sofa. Matthew's in Bromley. How does this affect you, landlord or tenant? Morning.
Morning, Nick. I was a landlord, and basically it was a very similar story to one of your callers earlier, where it was the other way around. He was actually went to the council, and you said you couldn't believe what he was actually saying.
Yeah, that was Mohammed up in South Shields.
I had the other side where I was a landlord, and I had a lady in there. She did have two kids, so I gave them notice, and I actually was trying to help them. There was actually a property across the road where they could have moved into, but she decided she wanted to get a council place. So she spoke to the council, and they told her not to go anywhere. And I was actually homeless myself at the same time.
Oh, my goodness.
So it caused me hell. And luckily, I paid for insurance through my building insurance, and they helped me. And the process took about 8 months. And finally, the council got her a place and got her out. So I'm living back there now.
Oh, well, that's good. Do you mind my asking, did you become homeless because the relationship broke up?
Yeah, that was it, basically. And I had kids. I only shared them 50% of the time, but went to the council and they said, no, you don't have any valid claim.
What do you think? How much money did you lose?
She paid. I didn't actually lose any money, to be fair, but I just wanted it as my home. That was the problem. I wanted to actually live in there myself. So I wasn't being horrible to her on purpose or get her out because I wanted more rent money, which obviously you hear a lot of stories. I just purely wanted to live in there myself, and I actually showed her loads of different properties around the corner, similar money, so she could have moved out and it wouldn't have disrupted her life a lot. But she chose to, I'm entitled to a council place, and she decided to go down that route.
And we'll continue going down that route. Well done that you finally got there, Matthew, and I'm glad you're no longer homeless, but to have to battle for those months, I mean, that is outrageous. You've got a homeless person say, look, my relationship's broken up, I've got nowhere to live. Can I go back into my house? No. Make sure you get evicted. We're going to stay with understandably, a lot of concern over that, and, of course, the position that should be taken by the UK. It's just 10:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is due to set out support for families struggling with the cost of heating oil, which has soared due to the conflict in the Middle East. A cabinet minister has told LBC that the UK is in constant dialogue with the US after President Trump's call for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. And the UK Health Security Agency is to provide some students in Kent with antibiotics after an outbreak of meningitis. LBC weather, mainly dry to start, but rain will move into much of the country by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the M25 anti-clockwise after an investigation earlier between Junction 24 for Potters Bar and Junction 23 for the A1M. It's heavy in Upper Edmonton on the North Circular eastbound. One lane stays closed at the A10 Great Cambridge interchange after a car broke down. In West Kingsdown, there are queues on the A20 London Road in both directions at Terry's Lodge Road. That's because of roadworks where temporary traffic lights are in place. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line between Wembley Park and Aldgate after a fire alert earlier. There are severe delays on the District line between Earls Court and Richmond. That's after there was an investigation earlier. And on the trains, East Midlands Railway have delays of up to 45 minutes and cancellations between St Pancras and Leicester after an investigation earlier.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
He has secured a glorious victory and he doesn't need any help from anyone. Except that it's all going so badly, he's now begging for help from everyone.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You've arrived. Your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Okay, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing pretty muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
There's one for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Tenpin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now
to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg. Flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Ever heard of Gale's Bakery? Not surprised if you haven't. It's pretty upmarket and it's very successful. And it obviously has some adverts.
So why does Gale's exist? Well, for us, it's got to be to feed people better. See, Gale's has always been a way of thinking, creating and serving.
Founded by Israeli baker Gail Megia in the 1990s, expanded by Israeli entrepreneur Ran Avidan from 2005, no longer linked to the company, by the way. In 2021, US investment fund Bain Capital acquired a majority stake in the business, which says it has no links with any country or government outside the UK. Why am I telling you about this? Because in the views of The Guardian, the opening of a Gales bakery close to a Palestinian cafe is almost akin to the Middle East conflict. Yes, you did hear that correctly. The Guardian is now facing accusations that the simple establishment of a Jewish business is now seen as a hostile act. Their words, not mine. In a piece on Saturday, one of their opinion writers had an interview with Faten and Mahmoud, the Palestinian owners of Cafe Metro in Archway. The nearby Gales was last month targeted for a second time by vandals who smashed windows and painted anti-Zionist graffiti. By the way, it's important to say the owners of Cafe Metro say we compete with Gales legally. They are not involved with this at all. But in the eyes of The Guardian, and I quote, a British business with no specific connections to any country or government outside the UK. Its very presence 20 metres from a small independent Palestinian cafe feels quietly symbolic, an act of heavy-handed high street aggression. It's a bakery. Is this the extent now? Now, years ago, many, many years ago, I used to have to effectively look, as deputy editor, have to look after and read editorial comments. And you want columnists who have punchy views. You don't want columnists who just write, isn't apple pie tasty and couldn't you do with a mother's love? There's no point having those doors. Nobody will read a word they say. Comment is a very, very tricky business. But is this a comment too far? That there is a Palestinian bakery in existence in this part of North London, Archway, Gales Bakery, which was started by an Israeli baker, grew through an Israeli entrepreneur, is now owned by a US company, investment company called Bain Capital. Bain Capital, it is reported, invests in military technology, including Israeli security companies. It is reported. I don't work for Bain Capital, so I don't know. And in the eyes of the Guardian newspaper, the arrival of Gales close to a Palestinian bakery is an act of heavy-handed high street aggression. This, my friends, has ties with our first story we did this morning in the first hour, which is that Al-Quds demonstration, which for some people, they are so blinded by, in some instances, hatred of Israel or hatred of Benjamin Netanyahu or, sadly, anti-Semitism, and you can be totally opposed to Benjamin Netanyahu and not be anti-Semitic. But yes, so whatever anything does that has the slightest trace of Israeli backing, in this instance, Gales Bakery, started by an Israeli baker, grown by an Israeli entrepreneur, sold to a US company that has, it is reported, interests and invests in military technology, they then get targeted by The Guardian as part of the Middle East. A slight overreach? You might have views on that. It almost brings us round full circle to the first story, doesn't it? But it is concerns over evictions. I've got a lot of you talking with this race to evict tenants, reportedly. Stephen's in King's Lynn. Stephen, what do you say to this? Good morning.
We're landlords.
Yes.
And we're now approaching our middle 70s.
Right. And how many properties do you have, sir?
We had five or six. We're down to about four now.
Right.
And we've had problems with the councils before. Why do they give them, the council, the right to tell tenants to stay put? Have they a legal framework for this? And could they show me in law where it is that the council can tell people to break the law?
I think you know the answers to all of those questions. There's no, I cannot, and I don't work in this field, but I cannot see any legal justification for what they're doing. They're doing it because they don't have enough properties.
Sorry, if I were to tell someone to go down, force the door open and sweep there, I'd be like the council, just say I'm on the council, that's all right, Billy.
Yes, I know. How concerned are you about this new legislation coming in?
We're trying to pare down eventually, but we have a couple of reasonable tenants, and they ask them to pay below the market rate for rent, mm-hmm. and they appear to be okay. If we have an issue, then I will bite in deeper.
What do you mean you will bite in?
I'd like someone to point out to me how the council has that right to tell people to break the law. Could you find out?
Well, there is no. I mean, yeah, we will be doing more coverage of this, but I don't need to find out. They can't, obviously, no local authority. And if you were to ask them, they would say it's not what's happening. They would say about provision. But you know as well as I do, unfortunately, it's because they don't have enough property. And I don't see how this change of legislation is going to make it any better. Stephen, I'm not surprised you're trading down some of your properties. Thank you for that. Jay's in Saffron Walden. Thank you, Stephen. Be well. Jay, what should the British reaction be to Iran? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. We shouldn't be helping at all. This is a Trump's war, and he went on excursion, and that's what he said, excursing there. And then before the war, were they, like all those cargoes going through Hormuz without any problems, right? Why did he go into Iran? Why?
I think he thought he could do another Venezuela, Jay.
No, but take him. That's his war. So we shouldn't get involved at all. Stay and watch it. How they watched the Second World War was panning, and they came last, right, to help us in Europe. That's what we should do with them.
Iran, Jay, thank you. That's your view on the Iranian situation. I'm going to close down Iran now because I want to come back to Online Safety Day. If you were listening earlier this month, we voted today on LBC, as we often do, and part of my coverage was an interview with the online safety campaigner, Ellen Room. The topic of online safety is all too real for her. She lost her son, Jules Sweeney, back in 2022, age 14. He'd completed an online challenge that went disastrously wrong. When we spoke, Ellen was seeking for her son's inquest to be reheard, and she explained why.
Because I can then use the law. So I wrote to the Attorney General, or my barrister did, Harry Lambert, 13 weeks ago. They haven't responded yet. So we have to get the Attorney General to grant permission, and then we have to apply to the High Court. But then I can use the new Data Use and Access Act to demand social media companies release that data. I want to know why my 14-year-old child isn't alive. And whilst there's a law there that I could use to possibly get answers, then I want to try it. But I'm still waiting for the Attorney General to respond, and that's incredibly frustrating.
When did your letter go in?
13 weeks ago.
Well, so I think LBC needs to make a call. If you have a brief word with my reporter, just get the details, we'll definitely put a call into the office. And we did, and I'm delighted to say, although of course it's difficult to comfort a grieving mother in that sense, but her request for the Attorney General is called, what's known in legal terms as a fiat. Now, fiat is an authorization for the family to bring legal proceedings to apply to the High Court. New powers have come into force via the Online Safety Act, and that was what was challenging, as you heard the mother explain. They're enabling coroners to request Ofcom collects data from online services. And as you also heard, that initially went in some 13 weeks ago. And if I can use the word, I'm not delighted because of the tragic circumstances that were involved. But within 48 hours of our involvement there, I'm pleased to say, can I say that in this instance, I don't know, that the Attorney General has now supported it. Permission has been granted. What's called this fiat, which in English is effectively a rehearing, if you will, of the inquest with additional evidence as that point not heard. And she can now move forward with the application. This will be the first case of its kind, Ellen tells us, where a parent asked the High Court to reopen inquest because of a child's online and social media data. And in a note that she sent to the team, she says she's determined to ensure the full circumstances are finally examined. So glad to have helped. And obviously, we will bring you an update as and when that comes in. I'm done. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, the videos and the opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I think it might be a moment for a quick recap. So, Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu waged a war last June that was gloriously successful and would have rendered Iran incapable of causing any harm to anybody for, I think I remember correctly, generations. And then 9 months later, they had to start another war. But don't worry, because they secured an immediate and glorious victory. Donald Trump was adamant about that. So adamant, in fact, that he not only insulted our own Prime Minister, but insisted that even if we were minded to provide him with some help, he wouldn't need it because they'd already won. And then we fast forward to today, when apparently they didn't notice where the Strait of Hormuz was, and they are begging for help from NATO allies that they'd previously alienated. I think that's it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. The Prime Minister is to set out plans to help households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in the Middle East. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to say later that helping families is his first priority. It's thought the announcement will contain special measures for people using oil to heat their homes. LBC's political editor Natasha Clarke has more details.
He will lay out this morning plans to help with tens of millions of pounds. They will specifically be for poorer households. So so they won't be for everyone, but they will, as you say, be to help with the cost of heating oil. And we know that they have had their prices spiked the most in the last couple of weeks because of the price cap, which keeps things down for people on most normal sort of other types of energy. Oil and gas has been spiking. The cost of crude oil has jumped above $100 a couple of times now.
A cabinet minister says the UK is in constant dialogue with President Trump after he called for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has effectively closed the strait, which is a key route for global oil supplies. Mr. Trump has warned that NATO faces a very bad future if members fail to help with his request. The Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden was asked on LBC this morning whether the UK could send ships to police the strait.
I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down. Our decisions will always be informed by what's in Britain's national interest. That starts with not being a protagonist in this war. But of course, we'll do what we can to protect our citizens and our military assets in the region too.
A 43-year-old woman has been charged with murder following the death of an 18-day-old baby in London. Police were called to a residential property in Westminster on Saturday after reports a child had fallen from a height. The baby girl died in hospital. Antibiotics are being provided for some students at the University of Kent in Canterbury following an outbreak of meningitis. Two people have died, 11 others are seriously ill in hospital. And employers are to be paid to hire young people in an effort to bring down the rising number who are not in work, training or education. The government has promised £1 billion in support and says the new deal aims to create 200,000 new jobs. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 9 points at 10,270. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, a dry morning for most, but widespread rain again by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting, like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after ten, and well, I know that I'm right because he said so.
The beginning, it's the beginning of building a new country, but they certainly, they have no navy, they have no air force.
It's all over. The war is over. He told us that it was. So, things that you need to know about early doors today. I think the first is that NATO is a defensive alliance. This is something that has been ridden roughshod over by various liars and traitors to the Western cause. When people like Nigel Farage talk about NATO threatening Russian interests in places like Ukraine, they are being both liars and traitors because they are parroting Kremlin propaganda, although Nigel Farage, as far as we are aware, has never been paid for doing so, unlike his close friend and former protege Nathan Gill. But they are also completely misrepresenting what NATO is. It is a defensive alliance. So if an act of attack, if an act of offence is taken against a NATO member, then it triggers the article that prompts all NATO members to join in the response. The United States of America, the only NATO member, I think in recent memory, if not ever, to have triggered, I think, Article 5, and therefore we sent many, many troops to Afghanistan, of course, including the hundreds that died from the United Kingdom, the ones that Donald Trump insulted not that long ago. I think it was in January of this year, but I could be wrong, actually. Let us refresh our memories about what Donald Trump said, both about NATO and about dead British servicemen and women, as long ago as earlier this year.
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines.
Do you know, how many times have I played that to you recently? I played it at the time a few times, and I've played it to you subsequently. And I mean, I'm almost reassured by the fact that my fury at listening to that hideous human being malign the memories of our war dead in that way is absolutely undimmed. You worry when you do this for a living sometimes that your sensitivities will ossify, that you'll grow a sort of suit of psychological armour that inures you to the horrors of what's happening in front of you. But say what you like about Donald Trump, he manages to cause profound and hideous offence, even on the 10th, the 20th, the 30th time of hearing. That I'm going to play it to you again because it is absolutely intrinsic to what is happening now and the conversation that we are about to have today.
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines.
Ah, man, they stayed a little back off the front lines. 457. Some confusion over that figure on this program because of the 457 dead, 405 were due to hostile action, 52 to non-combat injuries, illness or accidents, which means they may not have happened in the actual theatre of war. And that's why some people go with the figure 454, but this is relatively moot. It boils my blood every time I hear it because, of course, we are turning our attention back to Donald Trump and NATO today because he is insisting or demanding or threatening that NATO help him police the Strait of Hormuz. This despite the fact that he was claiming last week, literally claiming last week, and we can only find this on his social media posts. We haven't managed to find audio of this. I don't think it exists. Claiming last week that not only had the victory been achieved, but it was so complete that they wouldn't need any help from the United Kingdom, even if the United Kingdom's help was forthcoming. This was when he insulted Keir Starmer, our democratically elected Prime Minister, Donald Trump comparing someone unfavourably, a draft dodger, multiple draft dodger, comparing somebody unfavourably to Winston Churchill. If it wasn't for all the cheerleaders in this country who are so far up Donald Trump's backside that you can only see their toes, then I wouldn't obsess about it. But that's part of the problem that we have. Find me a Donald Trump supporter who didn't also support Brexit, and I'll find you an anomaly. But I mention Brexit only because it highlights how hard these people, these clowns, these idiots find it to climb down from a position that they had previously adopted, despite all the evidence amassing that they have been hideously and horribly wrong again. And here we are. What did I say to you 2 weeks ago? Well, possibly 1 week ago. I said to you that Donald Trump will claim victory even when no victory has been achieved. What we don't know.